Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I suppose you can be forgiven if at this point in time you're saying, hey, is this live? Yes, this is live. After several busy days and, just a mind-bendingly stunning lecture by Chris Hedges on Saturday night, and then Monday I had to have my hide chopped on some, and today we had to go for some doctoring for another member of the family. Lots of doctoring going on. That's what happens when you live in a toxic waste zone, among other things. But at any rate, and then this meeting I had to attend, and... hey, wait, you got to hear this. You got to hear this. This is great. Just a minute. You got to hear this. Hello?
I'm calling on behalf of West Virginia families to let you know that during our time of greatest need, Senator Rockefeller has turned his back on us. President Obama's EPA has declared war on coal, and Rockefeller voted against an amendment that would permanently end the EPA's war on West Virginia. Instead of stopping the EPA, Rockefeller voted with Obama and the radical environmentalists in the Senate. Please call 202-225-3121 and tell Senator Rockefeller to start standing up for West Virginia's families and jobs. Paid for by the Committee for Truth and Politics.
We'll get around to that in a minute. That has been happening all day long here. In that particular instance, I just got a quick text message from Agnes saying, Bob, it's that phone call again. Because usually you guys don't start dialing up until a couple more minutes into the program, but anyway... We got to talk about that. You've heard that, Rudy. You heard that now, right? But anyway, I'm glad just to be back behind the microphone this evening. Honest to God, I am. But the week is kind of, it's kind of been a train wreck already, right? You know, once you've missed Monday and Tuesday, it's kind of hard to recover Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But we're gonna. We really are gonna. And toward that end, a programming note, okay? So, tonight's a regular show, and Friday is a regular show. Dog willing. Tomorrow night is not a regular show. Now, stop! Wait. Tomorrow night is not a regular show. Tomorrow we will be on the road. By we, I mean Ferg and me, probably, because he's the horn intern junior grade, you might recall. He humps the bags and helps. No, really. I mean, it's an apprenticeship kind of thing. You know, he's learning how to hook up wires and what the knobs do and all of that stuff. Right. So we're going to be back down on the campus of West Virginia State University tomorrow evening. Because there is another... Well, think of this in a way as a sort of missionary work on our part. Because the Horn family is one unit. It's not just me, and it's not just anyone else. We do this as a family. And think of it as missionary work, because whenever I get the opportunity to show people how easily you can take a local event and make it global, and God knows, we carried the Chris Hedges lecture from the same facility Saturday night, and email after email after email and Facebook comments and all kinds of... Bob, that was really important. I'm so glad you did that. All right. Because it is important. You know, I think it was maybe Friday night when Preston called in and he was talking about the fact that we do have liberal media out there and we kind of agreed that, yes, it's out there, but it's sort of amorphous. It's rather cloud-like, and I know the cloud is supposed to be so cool. I just don't know anything about the cloud yet, and that's because I'm a geezer. But anyway, anytime I get the opportunity, and it arose on Saturday night when I was down there at West Virginia State, and there was some real amazement. What? We can do this? Yes, we can do this. Can you come back Thursday night? And since I do have that, you know, old Protestant missionary streak in me, no dirty jokes, please. It is, after all, Wednesday, prayer meeting Wednesday. I said, sure. Especially once I learned what the topic was going to be. Tomorrow night, on the campus at West Virginia State University, the Department of History and Culture Committee is going to present a lecture called The Constitution Under Attack. Now, you have to understand at the outset, I would go anywhere for this. But this is, I think, doubly important because being outside West Virginia, you probably don't know that West Virginia State University is the state's historically black institution of higher learning. You know this because it was cited in the single most toxic area of the Kanawha Valley, while the white, wealthy kids' private school is up directly across from the Capitol. Just say it. But, no, tomorrow night, beginning at 6 p.m., regular showtime, okay? Regular showtime tomorrow night, 6 p.m., we will carry live by a... Why do I go on with this pretense that I'm a professional broadcaster? Via both the audio stream, the regular audio stream for the show, and live video as well. This lecture, The Constitution Under Attack. And then the primary topicality of the lecture, Understanding the Continued Relevance of the 14th Amendment Under Domestic and International Law. The 14th Amendment is highly relevant, especially because the right wing so desperately wants to get rid of it. Flag, stag, and blue knot, pole, frazzle, lack, and anchor, babies! You know? And the lecture will be delivered by a brilliant young woman by the name of India Geronimo. And she is the director of the Damon J. Keith Law Collection of African American Legal History. I believe this is at Wayne State University in Michigan. What kind of credentials does she have to deliver a lecture such a, like titled Understanding the Continued Relevance of the 14th Amendment Under Domestic and International Law? Well, let's check. Let's see. She's been an attorney for racial justice at the American Civil Liberties Union National Legal Department. While there, she was the Marvin Karpatkin Fellow. She has litigated and advocated regarding affirmative action, racial profiling, challenges to the school-to-prison pipeline. Oh, the prison-industrial complex, anyone? Has that ever been touched upon on the horn before? Oh, why, yes, as a matter of fact, it has. She co-wrote a report on the use of police in schools. She's clerked for the Constitutional Court of South Africa. She served as a law clerk to the Honorable Damon J. Keith of the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. She's also clerked for the Honorable Robert L. Carter in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York. She is degreed with a Juris Doctor degree from Fordham, cum laude, I might add, and was graduated with a bachelor's from Emory University. Before she went to law school, she took a little time off in the real world, where she was a W.E.B. Du Bois Institute Fellow at Harvard, as well as being a teacher in the Yonkers public school system in New York. So I would say that, yes, India Geronimo probably has an absolute bubbling wellspring of information regarding the present attack on the 14th Amendment. And thus, I will get my happy butt into the rusty red 16-year-old pickup truck and go rolling down the mountain to do this. It's about an hour and 20-minute drive down, and probably longer than that back, because I don't see so good in the dark anymore, I'm finding out. And the headlights ain't worth a damn on the rusty red pickup truck. But, again, don't think, please, you know, don't go away because it's not going to be this show. This, I wouldn't go if this was not worth it. You understand? Please be here for this. This is incredibly important. This is, you know, for the same reason that Dar Jamal was carried on the horn, for the same reason that Chris Hedges was carried on the horn, for the same reason that Dr. Bill O'Brien and Keith Lilly so meticulously go through the eons of history. This is important. Because the right wing makes shit up. There I go, cussing on prayer meeting Wednesday. And I'll just, you know, reserve a spot on the barbecue for me. This is incredibly important. And when we, as the Horn family, take information like this and spread it beyond the four walls of an institution like West Virginia State, we magnify it exponentially. Not just twice over, not just five times over. You know, I'm hoping there will be a good room full of people tomorrow. I know that Ms. Geronimo has been told, and she gave her okay on this, and thinks it'll be pretty cool to do it. Because her friends and colleagues back in Michigan will be able to watch. There is a way to open up real and legitimate discourse even when the for-profit media don't want us to. Yes, yes, Psychoticus Rex. The right wing makes shit up is roughly equivalent to water is wet and ursoid mammaloids generally defecate in sylvine environments. Yes. And apparently, well, right. I just love that. Ursine mammaloids. I'm hanging on to that for all I'm worth. So that's where we'll be tomorrow night. Then Friday back to a regular Friday in the Front Porch show. And God willing, the crick don't rise. We'll have ourselves a nice, normal little week following that. Okay? So please, by all means, tune around, tune in and stick around tomorrow, because this is a conversation you're really, really, really a lecture, and there will be a Q&A afterward that you're going to want to be present for, because you're going to be able to arm yourself with the factual stuff that you need. You know, all BS detectors have to be periodically replenished with actual facts. Because the baggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, fourteenthers, and various and sundry assorted oatmeal dribbling booger eaters out there are constantly finding new areas of history, the law, the culture, the society, in which to make more crap up. So we just kind of we just and you're our only hope, the only hope, is having the facts with which to battle them. So, again, tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I, India Geronimo, the Constitution under attack, understanding the continued relevance of the 14th Amendment under domestic and international law. Be there. Aloha. Book'em Dano. So that's the program note portion of the program. Now, another portion of the program, one which many of you despise, and none more than I. I've conducted, sort of inadvertently and advertently, a little experiment over the last week or so. I have tried to keep all mentions of fundraising to a bare minimum. It has not been a good idea. thanks to that, those very few of you who have continued to contribute to the Nifty Thrifty 250, even in the absence of me desperately exhorting you to do so. Thank you. It is the 13th day of April. We will fast be, well, Friday will be halfway through April. And if I could tell you that we were even halfway, no, but we're not. So, really, if you've got $10 laying around that you're not going to do anything with, you know, you're not going to go out and blow it on scratch-off game tickets or, you know, something silly like food, you are more than welcome and encouraged to use the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. Headonradionetwork.com, there is a tab there called Contribute. It has both the PayPal button, a subscription form, if you wish to subscribe, although we're not entirely certain whether that works, as well as the snail mail address if you prefer to go through snail mail. So, there we have it. Please. Okay, please. Now, I said that we would get back to what you heard a few minutes ago. You'll notice at the end of the robo-babble that it was brought to you, Jay Rockefeller stood with the radical environmentalists. You'll notice that piece of, what did I say a few minutes ago? The right wing just makes crap up? Well, look, we've already got an example of it on the program. Jay Rockefeller, radical environmentalist? I mean, if anybody around here is going to be a radical environmentalist, it's probably me. But then again, I'm not a radical environmentalist because I'm not an environmentalist. I'm a human rights advocate. I don't give a good tinker's damn about the planet if it doesn't have any people on it. It can, and will, 4 billion years from now or something like that, blow up for when the sun just goes, and we're done. If we haven't figured out a way to get off this rock by then. Or if we haven't just ceased being us. No, I'm a human rights advocate. But still, when a thuggish, filthy bunch of lying sacks of shit like the Committee for Truth in Politics talks about radical environmentalists, they're talking about me, who takes real umbrage at having my friends, my neighbors, my family, and my colleagues poisoned to death so that coal companies can go on reaping profits that they still have not figured out a way to stuff into a U-Haul and drag behind them to the grave. You see what I mean? But this is apparently a really noxious group, this Committee for Truth in Politics. They are apparently headed by James Bopp, that's Bopp with two P's, James Bopp Jr. He was the man who did the primary work guiding the Citizens United case through the court system. Yeah, that James Bopp Jr. So, in other words, people all over West Virginia are getting these calls. Rotten little rat bastards have used up my cell phone minutes. You heard it. We've got six lines. They've called all six. Twice. Because James Bopp and his corporate contributors, because while we don't know who the contributors to the Committee for Truth in Politics are, yeah, we do. I mean, you know, take a bet. I got a buck, says the Koch brothers give. I got a buck, says Massey Energy Alpha Natural Resources give. I got a buck, says the United States Chamber of Commerce gives. I got a buck, says Monsanto gives. I got a buck, says ExxonMobil gives. I got a buck, says BP gives. Oh, speaking of BP. Now, a few minutes ago, I mentioned fundraising. I tweeted something over the weekend because I about had a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy and had a baby coming out of the top of my head. I wanted to go back and check something that Chris Hedges had said during the lecture Seneca to West Virginia Citizens Action Group and West Virginia Patriots for Peace. I wanted to check it, so I went back to the video of it and went to watch it. Now, here is a lecture by a guy who is telling people about the predatory nature of corporate conduct in the United States, the effect that corporations have had in the vast negative sense on our ability to govern ourselves, right? I mean, many of you have already heard the Chris Hedges lecture. If you haven't, you really, really ought to. I sent the audio off to Ben Birch. I don't know if he got it up at White Rose Society or not. I need to double check that. But the at least the first hour of the lecture itself in video is up at Ustream. So I'll go over to Ustream to check the audio, or to check the content, check the video. And I, you know, click on the video so I can start watching it. Click, click, clackety click. And before I can do anything, before it will load, I have to watch. I have to watch a BP commercial. A BP commercial. A BP commercial in which, and bear in mind, they're on the same page. You can get the Dar Jamal lecture, which was equally horrifying, talking about the people who are sick and dying along the Gulf from what BP did. And I got to watch a BP commercial so that I can then watch Chris Hedges. And the BP commercial is replete with a woman in black slacks and a white shirt and an apron on, carrying a big tray of seafood and onion rings down to the restaurant patrons. And she's, oh, it's getting better all the time. The seafood's back. The Gulf is back. The town is back. Everything's back. It's like BP never did anything. And lordy, BP has been so good to us. Right? Well, you gotta watch that commercial because we here at the Horn cannot afford to go commercial free. I'm adding that to the list of goals. But damn if that wasn't just disgusting. But I only mention BP because I've got a dollar that says BP has contributed to what's their name again? Oh, yeah, the Committee for Truth in Politics. You know what we need? We need a law for truthful naming of untruthful organizations. Because this outfit ought not be called the Committee for Truth in Politics. It ought to be illegal for them to call themselves the Committee for Truth in Politics. They ought to be called a bunch of sleazy right-wing corporate hacks and flacks who want to do everything they can to make sure that corporations can continue poisoning your soon-to-be dead ass. That's their real purpose in life. Oh, and here's another fun thing. Not only are they a bunch of sleazy corporatists, you know, the kind of filthy bastards you want. I don't know. Maybe they've all got beards. Maybe none of them shave. Maybe none of the guys look in the mirror. I don't know, because I couldn't. But not only are they sleazy and filthy, they're also scofflaws. They don't believe, they literally do not believe the law applies to them. They refuse, no matter how much money they spend, no matter how many robocalls they put out, they refuse to file anything with the Federal Election Commission. And they won't report who they are, and they're, you know, everything is a dummy job. I used that combination of star whatever to try to get their number back. It's a dead number. In other words, they are phishing phone numbers. They are fraudulently putting out a phone number. You can't reach them. You can't get off their list. You are and see, this is how it works in 21st century America, and this is sort of a larger point, I suppose, to the basic "I hate these bastards" nature of this of my complaint. If I hate American Idol, you know what I can do? Click. And I can be watching, oh, I don't know, Rachel Ray not tip somebody again. You hate Rachel Ray? Click. Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Click. Something on MTV. Click. The History Channel, When Aliens Walk Among Us. Click. You can get away from it. There's even a big red button that you go click and the whole thing turns off. But with this kind of political speech, neither you nor I nor anyone else, at least anyone who answers their phone, has any recourse. There is no one you can tell, don't ever call me again. There is no one that you can unregister. There is no with there is no do not call list. Because this filth, these outright lies, for instance, that Jay Rockefeller is some sort of an environmentalist, trust me when I tell you he's not. I'll back that up with hard facts. The man will not meet with anyone who is opposed to mountaintop removal. Jay Rockefeller is the George Wallace of mountaintop removal. Mountaintop removal yesterday, mountaintop removal today, mountaintop removal forever. Jay Rockefeller will not meet with anybody who opposes mountaintop removal, and these lying sacks of crap have the nerve to refer to him as taking a radical environmentalist agenda? Oh, my aching granny's back! But no matter how much they, no matter how many falsehoods, no matter how many outright go to hell lies are contained in one of these robocalls from the Committee for Truth in Politics, it doesn't matter. They still get to talk to you if you answer your phone. It's not even a human being. You don't even have the pleasure of cussing them out. They're not even employing a human being to make these calls, to sit there behind some damn dialer reading a script time after time after time after time. For all I know, the call came from India. Wouldn't be surprised. And that's the way and that is the nature of political speech in this country. Political speech has been reduced to a one-way street. They have it and you don't. There was a surprising little moment in Barack Obama's speech this afternoon. Boy, howdy, I tell you what, he gives a good speech. I mean, he is a speech-giving machine. He gives some good speech. That man can sure give speech. Did I mention? I think he gives... He's a speecher. But there was one little moment inside Barack's speech this afternoon, in which he sort of pulled the curtain back for a minute. In talking about Medicare and Medicaid, he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not going to balance the budget on the backs of people who have no political representation in Washington anyway and are therefore defenseless. That's not exactly what he said, but it is awfully damned close. And for a minute there, I kind of sat up and my pink little ears perked up. And I thought, well, damn, Barack! Kind of telling the truth there for a second, aren't you, buddy? You don't represent them. The Congress don't represent them. Neither the House nor the Senate. The Supreme Court is not 10 cents worth interested in them. Their state legislatures don't give a tinker's damn about them. And they are screwed. But if you're a regular listener to the Horn, a member of the Horn family, as it were, you didn't need President Not Sure to tell you that. You already knew it. Because you live with it every day. You know you have no representation, by and large. Oh, some of you may be fortunate enough to live in a district where you have someone who is liberal in the Congress. But no matter who controls that body, no liberal voice is ever going to carry the day. We roar and we cheer when Bernie Sanders stands up from Vermont as an independent and sounds like he's speaking for all the normal people in America. But we know that he's not going to be able to do anything within the halls of power as they are constituted. We understand that. I mean, we understand that all the way down to the ground. And in acknowledging some little bit of that today, I thought President Not Sure had a moment of real surprising candor. As to the speech itself, perhaps we will talk later. My take on it? Wow. Can't he give some speech? That's about as far as I go with it. Because what that speech staked out was exactly what his position was. And just as someone who has had to negotiate things once in a while, I mean, I'm not talking hostages or anything. Hell, anybody who's ever married has had to engage in negotiations and has probably done a better job of it than Barack Obama. I mean, you know Michelle wins all the arguments. When you're really starting out on a negotiating track, there's an old school of thought that says, ask for the sun, moon, and stars, and be willing to settle for the moon. But Barack Obama has this, I think, credulous, honest streak, and he's willing to state exactly what he wants. And then, when the Republicans tell him no, he starts giving things away. It's like that old gag about John Boehner trying to buy a lawnmower from Barack Obama. Got a lawnmower there, I see. Yeah, I do. What do you take for it? $20. Give you 18. What if I sell it to you for 15? 12. I'll sell it to you for 10. That's what it's like when you watch Barack Obama negotiate. And thus it is that I'm convinced that no Republican is actually interested in the presidency in 2012. But I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But boy, howdy, that was one Jim Dandy speech. Can't he give a speech? Hoo-wee! Yeah. Marty noting, you should care about the planet. Remember, if we don't take care of this planet, the planet will take care of us like the Cosa Nostra would. No. You missed my point, Marty. I don't care about a planet if it doesn't have people on it. Because if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, no, it doesn't make a noise. I care about what the planet was while the dinosaurs were on it, because it ultimately became the planet that we as humans were on. But a post-human planet inherited by the six-foot-tall race of evolved sentient cockroaches? I don't care if 150,000 asteroids hit it. Screw it. I'm kind of homocentric that way. But I think maybe you understand what I mean. That's why I am not an environmentalist. I'm a humanist. I'm a human rights advocate. Because what does a 300 million year old shark's jaw found in the depths of a Kentucky coal mine mean if it's just run across by blind caterpillars two or three times a day as it sticks out from the wall? Not much. At least as far as we can tell from the blind caterpillar's perspective, because then again, they ain't talking, or we ain't listening. And if they are and we are, we still don't speak the language, so it's like the Gary Larson cartoon of those the dolphins in the tank and the bemused professor standing outside it. The two dolphins looking at each other like, what do we got to do? And the professor's saying, I don't know, Fred. He just keeps making these habla espanol noises. You got to want to. But that's my point. It's probably a little bit too broad. Sure, I care about the planet, because we're part of a living thing, and the living thing is the planet, and the living thing is the solar system, and the living thing is the universe. I think it's a scope of perception, really. You know, can an eyelash contemplate, you know, can the cell, one cell on an eyelash, contemplate Michelangelo's David? Kind of doubt it. Eyelashes serve a purpose, but that ain't it. And that's the way I feel about us. We reach and we grope as human beings. We reach and we grope and we grasp, never understanding that in some ways we're trying to comprehend things. No. Jim disagrees. Homocentric. I do not agree. Man has effed up this world. How do we know? We don't know. We really don't know. I mean, the dinosaurs didn't screw up theirs. But they're gone. And they were far more successful than we, in terms of at least living on the planet. So, there you go. So, do tune in tomorrow night. That matters. I, India Geronimo, the Constitution under attack. Because as long as we're here, we might as well understand the structures within which we are desperately attempting to live. Right? Yeah. So it's 22 minutes before the hour, and I'm going to quit fiddle farting around and go to the phones. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. And by the way, thanks very kindly to three of you. In short order, three of you have kicked in on this month's Thrifty 250, and there are four less spaces now that need to be filled. It is much appreciated, I hope you know. So onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra, what's up?
Hey, so yeah, that quote you were looking for was like, there's nothing courageous about asking for sacrifice from those who can least afford it and don't have any clout on Capitol Hill. Not a true statement has ever been spoken from that damn president. I was rolling. I said, oh, shit. You know, it slipped.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. It's like, you know, wow, did he really mean to give away the secret recipe for Kentucky Fried Chicken, seven herbs and spices, and the recipe for Coca-Cola?
Well, no, no, I'm just so jaded, but I have to say that, you know, yeah, I was, listen, they have overreached so badly that he really didn't have to do too much, and he finally made some stark differences, but leave it to the Republicans at Ryan to come out with something so horrific. I mean, yeah, I have to say I appreciated the calling them out on, you know, what they're trying to do to, you know, the safety net. I mean, I thought finally, you know, finally he said something that was pretty damn clear, and he even went on to talk about, you know, hold your hat, you know, the wealth distribution. I was shocked by that little paragraph too.
But I guess the question is, Sandra, are you as cynical as I am? Do you see this as all the this? I can't help wondering if this is the big catalog of stuff he's going to give away.
Well, no, but the thing is, it's a bit different. Like I said, we've been, you know, I am not, like you said, it's good speechifying, and that's about as far as I can go with Obama at this point after the first 3 years of his presidency. But it did sort of just expose just how frightening the Republican Party has become, because, you know, they immediately ran on the TV talking about class warfare. It's always class warfare with them, but it's not working no more. And that's the thing that I think Obama can rely on, that the shit is so bad that I don't even think people are buying the tax cut thing anymore, which means that Obama can come out against it now. It's that bad. So I'm not looking at it as if Obama has done anything different. I just think the situation out there is so bad and so blatant that what else is he going to say on some level? You know?
Yeah, well,
if he wanted to distinguish himself at all, he barely had to say anything because it's so draconian. But
by the same token, Sandra, there's an element about this speech where you kind of look up and say, in a way, this speech didn't even have to be given at all. Because even in giving the speech, because I sat there watching, I went, wait, stop, because there he is talking about debt.
Yeah, well, no, that was my next comment. I'm like, well, he just still is on the same, you know, he's still running the same frame, though. He didn't step away and say, oh, we need to actually, you know, do some spending. I mean, you know, they're so trapped by this, oh, we must manage the debt, which is scary, but we've been so rolled. I was just grateful that he wasn't talking about direct cuts in the program along with them. That's my thing. And I was thinking to myself, damn, we are really bad off if I'm, like, really glad just not to hear him agreeing with the cuts, you know?
Well, the thing is, I kept getting the notion that when he there were so many moments, especially during the front end of the speech, where I was doing that sort of spitting at the television screen thing that I don't like to do but find myself doing so often. When he said, our debt comes from Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the prescription drug program, and defense spending. I just, you know, damn. Why does defense spending have to be lumped in with the things that we actually owe the people?
And not only that, but I thought it was really disingenuous when he just sort of lumped it all. Two-thirds of all our budget is, you know, the entitlement and defense, you know, just sort of really obfuscating on the defense aspect of it, as they always do, because, you know, he can step out and talk about the 90 versus 1%, because, like I say, you can't avoid it, but they just can't quite come to terms with the defense spending, you know, and how that may... Because he likes to sit up there and give a quick little lesson. Obama's good for that thing.
Well, and did you catch the line about, and I could, you know, and when he was talking about spending and so forth, and he said, and that comes mostly from members of my own party, and, you know, I can sympathize with that. There was a sort of feeling to that, Sandra, of, but I'm smarter than you are, and this is how we have to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. That's no different than all the other kind of, you know, coming together speeches that he gives. The only thing different about this one for me was the, you know, oh, we can't afford the tax cuts, you know, for people like myself and the rich anymore. I mean, at least it was stated by a president, you know, because we've been hit over the head so long with this, oh, my God, no revenue, just cut, cut, cut. You know, I'm just waiting for somebody to even mention, you know, the sort of never-ending idea that we can cut taxes for the rich and somehow all the services we need and want will just magically appear.
Yeah, and...
And I'm just grateful that, you know, at least he used his bully pulpit to make that distinction. Now, as far as the details, yeah, you know, I'm not believing any of it because as soon as they start threatening to, you know, not raise this sort of fake ceiling thing, which is another thing that's absurd since no other country on the planet has any kind of idiotic policy like this. The ceiling shit, that's completely perverse anyway.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This was a nice little finger in the eye speech, I guess, except for the debt part. But by the same token, do you necessarily want to do that to the Republicans before the debt ceiling hostage taking begins?
Well, no, but you see, the problem with the debt ceiling thing is that the Democrats could have taken care of that when they had all three branches. That's the thing. That's why it's really disturbing, and I fisheye it, because it's like, oh, well, whatever. You know, you're waiting to have this this negotiation now when you didn't have to have it for this. And plus, we've had the lifting of the debt ceiling numerous other occasions. It's never been a thought. So now we're going to have to, have a battle royale with you drawing the sand into the complete destruction of the safety net, and we're supposed to be like, oh, thank you, Barack. I mean, I mean, the whole thing is like sort of manufactured crises. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it exactly is. That's the whole point. but there's the right wing is so far out in front of him on messaging, it's not even funny because... Sometimes I just feel a little creepy, like somebody's listening in, which is weird, seeing as how we hope folks are listening in. But when I see chinless Mitch McConnell standing in front of a camera, Sandra, and saying the exact polar opposite of what has been said time after time after time on this program, and you're one of the ones who said it, when I see Mitch McConnell say, we have to understand we have a debt problem, not a revenue problem. You know, I kick furniture because that's the controlling meme now, is that,
yeah,
we've got a debt problem.
And the fact that, I mean, the thing is, it's just so crazy because every example of this, you know, coming austerity that's being enacted, it's just falling. I mean, I know we've been here before, but Britain, they are contracting. This policy...
Yeah, did you see that little chart that was out today? I saw it over at Crooks and Liars.
Mm-mm.
It's fairly high up on the page, I think, still. And the title of the post is... John Pear, or Purr, not sure which, wrote the post. It's called, Meanwhile in the UK, the Hopelessness of Austerity. And it's a little graph from Eurostat. Surprise hit, UK's economy contracted unexpectedly in the fourth quarter. So you've got this little uptick, 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 and then right after the austerity programs, it went in.
Well, no, but the way it's framed as a surprise, I mean, they're still trying to sell. That's what I'm saying. It's just absurd. They're still trying to sell. Well, even though the European economies are collapsing all around in the face of these huge public spending cuts, you know, we've got to still do it over here. You know, the sort of confidence fairies and the bond vigilantes and all that bullshit, because where are they going to put their money? You know, it's all a bunch of smoke and mirrors. It's a lie to subject the people, you know, to a form of warfare that don't involve weapons.
Well, yeah, and if you want to extend it a little bit further, when you're talking about fiat currency, which is in turn based upon the full faith and credit of any given government, well, the full faith and credit of the United States government is predicated upon the labor, which in turn generates pay, which in turn generates tax revenue.
Well, Ben Bernanke, you know, said that the way they extended the money to the banksters was just adding a few zeros to their ledger via computer. So, you know, the sort of hysteria about the whole deficit debt stuff is like, you know, can you sell us another bill of goods? Because this ain't washing. Because you just keep giving away money to the various constituencies who have clout on Capitol Hill. Okay?
Yeah, not those folks that he referenced who don't.
Right. So it's a nice rhetorical from Obama, I agree with you. But it's just, it's a little bit too, you know, it's too late in the game for me to be buying it now. And we're beyond speechifying. It's like, Yeah, whatever, Mr. Obama. What are you going to do when they refuse to raise the ceiling and cause this sort of fake tumbling of the whole world economy? Are you going to let Rand Paul filibuster it and stop the world markets? I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, Sandra, do you think that, because, you know, I heard one of those statistics in the speech that you and I know almost by heart, that most of the progressive slash liberal, whatever we want to call ourselves, side of the spectrum knows, you know, about wage stagnation and about how wages of working class people have gone down while the wages of the top 1% up of 1% have gone up by $250,000 a year. You know, we all know that. But was there anybody in the listening audience, do you think, for Barack Obama who's really? Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, and they're not, you know, no, but they're already framing it, you know, typical liberal, you know what I mean? The whole, you know, they throw in the word liberal and all of a sudden, you know, you can't take the speech seriously.
And everybody goes, and tunes out, right?
Right, but when he's ignoring the base and shitting on us, then it's taken seriously. So the fact that he suggested that, you know, that even the New York Times, the headline was like increasing. He ain't talking about increasing taxes. He's just talking about letting them expire. I'm so sick of it. It's like I look at the New York Times, and it, I don't know if that headline is still here. Oh, it said, yeah, in deficit plan, Obama urges cuts and taxes on the rich. Did he say he was going to raise the taxes on the rich, Bob?
No.
You know what I'm saying? So as soon as you mention any sort of taxation, everyone freaks out. You know, I don't know. I'm just, and I'm not going to be that critical of Obama. It's like whatever. I mean, he put out a different narrative a little bit just by letting people know some more information that maybe they wouldn't have known, I guess.
And that's why I asked that question. You know, I never anymore. I make no assumptions about what Emery and Eileen out there in their Barca loungers know about the way America really works.
Well,
and I'm not trying to be a snob about that.
Well, no, not only that, but I mean, I think that, you know, yeah, it's good to sort of look at it that way, because I do think, you know, because we've been sort of pounded over the head with this sort of individual, rugged individual business, you know, that it's so internalized. So I think you're right to say that, well, I mean, how much of this is sort of, new information? I mean, maybe it is, but on the other hand, people, I don't really think people buy it. I think that they think that whatever situation they're in is their problem. I really do believe there's a huge strain of that in this culture. So, mobilization and all this sort of stuff that we think is the prescription, you know, just don't play in a lot of corners in this country. Even if you are being shat on, you still see it as your problem. You need to have a better attitude. You need to get your resume right. you need to work for free for a while, and you know, maybe some door will open.
That ain't, you know what, that's not the America that your mothers or my parents or grandparents would recognize as America.
Right, but I mean, you have to say that that is a sort of prevailing type of attitude. I come across it all the time, I got to tell you.
And it's, and yeah, right, because you know what, that's what, if that's what our betters tell us we have to do, it's what we have to do, because, you know, we wouldn't want to go out and march in the streets or anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm telling you that sort of, you know, it's just not something that occurs to huge swaths. So, yeah. But I do think people can sort of begin to see that the wealth distribution is skewed. I don't really think you have to jump that far. That's why that Ryan's plan, although it's all celebrated amongst the elite media, It's horrific. It's horrifying because I think everyone has parents and they know people who rely on these huge, ginormous programs, Bob. They're not small. What they're talking about is radical transformation.
Well, I still think we need... There I go again. You know, me and my Pollyanna optimism. Somebody needs to, you know, have one of those Jesus Barack moments and say, listen, you don't ever equate the defense budget with the essentials of survival that are Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. You don't ever, you never, 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 never do you equate those two again.
Well, there was, you know, really not that much discussion about the whole security state apparatus. I mean, he's not really in a position. I mean, look at what he's doing, you know. It's sort of like, I just read that war is costing already up, I think it's like $700 million now.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to kind of look.
Well, what, a year, you know, the recent continuing resolution debate, Sandra, ended up at a $38 billion figure. Now, that's what? Half of a year of the Iraq War in its heyday?
Right, but...
It's maybe a year of Afghanistan?
Yeah, but they're cutting so much from the sort of child nutrition. I mean, I was just, like, looking at some of the cuts, and it's just kind of like, wow. You know, really frightening in its sort of attack on the most vulnerable, you know? And this is only the opening salvo, so... I was shocked when I heard Obama say, oh, he won't extend them again. You know, what do you think about that comment?
You know, I...
What do you think? No, seriously, I mean, you know...
No, you want to know the first thing that... because I talked to the television. It's a genetic thing I got from my dad. The minute he said, I will not re-extend the Bush tax cuts, the word just... Maybe it's Tourette's. Just came right... Bullshit.
Well, see, that's what I mean. It's like the credibility factor. I guess that was the thing. It's like, that's why I was laughing at you when you were talking about, oh, he gives good speech. It's just like, yeah, it's really hard to go beyond that because it all sounded pretty good. But then you think, dude, you got to raise $1 billion for your election. You better, you know, I mean, how far can it go? You know?
Right, and how many, has anybody done the math? How many, well, let's do the math, dang it. I think I've got my calculator pretty close to hand here. Let's see if my Microsoft calculator will accomplish, let's see, there's a 1, 2, 3. Let's see, it's thousands. 1, 2, 3 million. I can't see all the zeros. But divided by 5. Yeah, that's $1 billion. That's $1 billion divided. Yeah, that's $1 billion divided by 5 equals, oh, Jesus, 2 million people are going to have to give $5 each if ordinary people are going to, you know, because that's the theme that we were given, that, you know, Barack Obama raised tons of money, individual donations, $5 and $20 at a time. Horseshit. There was tons of money from Goldman Sachs and tons of money from J.P. Morgan Chase and various and sundry other bankster outfits.
Yeah, and, you know, the sort of, I mean, the fact that the media is already going on about, oh, how risky is the talking about tax increases, you know, because that is where the constituency lies, you know, the hell with the rest of us.
But there are, you know, there are those of us, you're one, I'm one, who remember what got done to Walter Mondale in 1984. You know, Reagan was on the ropes, or so we're told historically, when Mondale said, you know what, we're going to have to raise taxes. The difference is, I'll tell you that, he won't. And Mondale got crucified.
Right. No, no, no. I'm saying it's just I don't know. I mean, I don't know how because unless Obama is prepared to, you know, come out beyond the middle of the day and talk about this day in and day out, he might get in trouble for it.
Well, there's one other little wrinkle in this process too, Sandra, and that's this. He said he would not re-extend the Bush tax cuts. Well, that's legislation for the Congress to pass. What if the Congress does and he signs the bill? I mean, did you understand anything in what he said to indicate I will veto that?
Yeah, I mean, no.
Because that's how you say that. I will veto it.
Yeah, no, but the main point is it's just the, you know, the whole credibility factor. It's like, as far as I'm concerned, it's shot. So I have to just, you know, I have to wait and see. That's the only place that I can be at, because some of it sounded good, but after what he did with the tax cuts already, it's just like, yeah, and we're supposed to take your word for it because.
And I wish, you know, I'll get some pushback on this, Sandra, from folks that, you know, still want to believe that he's playing 11-dimensional chess and all of that crap. But I what it boils down to is I don't believe the man anymore. You know, I hate to say it, but I don't. I wish that there had been something for me to hang on to in that speech. I wish the speech had not been made. You don't have to speechify before you go tell somebody to shove it up their fundament.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, like I said, we just have to wait and see. But I'm a bit concerned because the idea that they're running the discussion about, oh, you know, the raising of the debt ceiling, you know, on one hand, you hear that, oh, if they don't, you know, some sort of economic catastrophe, which means that they will have to. Oh, but Obama already said he's open for negotiations, and it's just kind of like, oh, you know, why?
Well, I mean, see, I have all these nightmare scenarios that run through my tiny little mind when I hear things like this, and I thought, well, you know, wait, what would be cool? Well, if you're a Republican, let's promise to leave Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security alone during the debt ceiling negotiations in exchange for a promise to extend the Bush tax cuts to 2014. How's that sound?
I mean, you know, it's sort of never ending. I mean, what horrors can come out of this? But the whole idea that he's even opening it up, he should just say, well, you know, you go ahead, don't raise it. You know, because it's a congressional act. You understand what I'm saying? He shouldn't have to stick his oar in it, as they say in England, at all. But he is, and that's when it all goes awry for us, when Obama decides to meet people and all that, you know?
Yeah. You know, I just had an email come in from David in Tennessee, Sandra, and he's been listening to NPR a little bit today, and he says, NPR, in their afternoon coverage of the president and the Ryan plan, said, a significant number of Republicans are pulling back from full support of the Ryan plan now that the nation has learned a bit about it.
Right. Well, see, yeah, no. But I looked at that plan and I was horrified just because they want to turn the only thing to keep old people alive into a voucher system. You know, it's kind of like, hello?
Yeah, and David goes on, well, duh. Looks like the president is maybe jumping in front of a parade looking for his baton and a 3-foot-tall fur hat.
Right. That's the thing. That's what I mean. It was the overreach is so great. And Ryan is touching a program that, you know, when people who aren't even politically involved in the least, they hear something like that, they're going to be like, you're going to do what? So, yeah, look for the Republicans to run the hell away I can't imagine that most Americans, no matter what side of the aisle they're on, is going to say, oh, yeah, let's destroy you know, the health care for all people.
Might they be finding out that it still that the third rail still has a little bit of voltage running through it, a little bit of current?
And not only that, but it was funny listening to him talk about leaving the old people to the mercy of the market. But hey, Obama, you were okay leaving the rest of us to it when you pulled the public option. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, dude, you got good rhetoric, but it can be applied across the board. That's the thing. I was like, yeah, I don't want to leave my mother to the tender mercies of the free market, but hey, I don't want to be left to either. Shit.
And that's the thing. There's this undercurrent that runs through all of this that, well, we're talking about the people who are old now, but you people who plan on getting old later, oh, it's gonna be a doozy.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, but at any rate, it's sort of I'll just take it for what I heard, and as like you, you know, just sort of okay, interesting.
I hate myself for that.
Hey, but listen. Meanwhile, though. Another Negro just got found guilty for obstruction of justice. They're going to send Barry Bonds to jail if they can. It's like, don't you have somebody else you can round up like some of these banksters? Who gives a F about Bonds? But he just got found guilty. And I was like, damn. What about Roger Clemens? How's that bitch going to get done?
Yeah, Mark, Mark Juice McGuire's still walking free.
Well, I just don't, you know, like I said, the Barry Bonds thing, I've always...
Sammy Sosa got out of the country, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but he smiled enough. They weren't going to do nothing to him. I was always amused by Bonds because he was sort of like, yeah, you know, suck on this, fuck you, horror show.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. He was uppity. He was uppity.
Sort of, I don't care. I'm just hitting it. And that was it. But see, now... He ain't hitting it no more, so it's like...
I have a neck the size of a bull and testicles the size of raisins. Yeah.
And, you know, another Negro off to prison. I mean, I really don't know. But,
Well, maybe he can... Jesus, I hate myself. Maybe he can get some pointers from Michael Vick. There's another one.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, that's why I was just like, oh, no. And listen, I'll let you go, but I this article in the Salon, which was making fun of Thomas Friedman. Did you see this?
Yes.
Shut up. I was just cringing because basically the article is talking about, oh my God, someone told him to stop talking to service industries, making up shit, basically. So they said that he stopped in his writings, but now he's talking to hotel workers. So he was talking to his hotel worker in Cairo, and I'll read it. The young-sounding Egyptian woman who spoke with me from the reservation department offered me a room and then asked, do you have a corporate rate? I said, I don't know. I work for the New York Times. There was a silence on the phone for a few moments, and then she said, can I ask you something? Sure. Are we going to be okay? I'm worried. Right. Somebody's going to ask some asshole like him to reassure her about her country and the state of flux? God, he's horrific.
Oh, he's terrible. He's just awful. And the world is flat, that thing. I applied the crotchety old Evelyn Wood speed reader series to that and went, ah, bullshit, you know, and threw it aside. Because you know, what's he going to do? Oh, wait a minute. Let me consult my magic eight ball. Oh, I'm sorry, honey. Answer hazy. Ask again later. It's best I got.
Well, no, but it's the whole thing, though. But it's just made up, though. That's the thing about him. All these sort of encounters with these kind of poorish working people around the world. It's just a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say up front, I have those encounters. But I have those encounters because I'm like them.
Right.
Yeah, I'm po folks.
Know? Right. That's it. Shit. But this fool with his cab conversations and, oh, it's hard. I've always hated him so much anyway. I just thought that was.
Well, you know what he's bogarting? Who was that great columnist of years gone by out in Chicago? Pretty, you know, had a talent for writing. Royko. Mike Royko.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, Royko would say, you know, my friend Blastovitz the barber was telling me the other day while he was trimming my hair, And you understood reading a Royko column that there was a whole bunch of nudge, nudge, wink, wink going on, and the barber didn't exist. I get the idea that Friedman read him somewhere back in the dim mists of time and went, really? I can talk to those people too.
Yeah, well, no, but it's...
And just started, you know, started making crap up. But the thing is, he never gave us the nudge and the wink.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is I always thought when I first stumbled upon him, I'm like, is this for real? Because then I read about his background, just how rich he is, and it's just kind of like, oh, no. All of it was just, he's just really horrifying. And he has such a huge platform.
Oh, and he's taken seriously by people that you wish wouldn't.
Well, no, but maybe it's not going to be so huge much longer, because you notice I keep sending you articles. I'm always sending you the full article. That will be the mode from now on until, you know, my little free paywall expires. Then I will move on to something else. But I think a lot of other people will be moving on to something else too, because who's going to pay $15 a month for the New York Times?
No. Mm-mm.
Anyway.
No, not for some of that other high. Although I got to give them credit where credit's due. There's a brilliant editorial in the paper today about one of the disappearing towns here in West Virginia.
Oh, I saw that. Yes. Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask you about that one. You're right. Well, yeah.
And you know, I'm proud of them for highlighting it. And they don't seem to mince any words about, you know, this is wrong. Editorial today talking about Lindytown, West Virginia. And bear in mind, when you're talking about West Virginia, you're talking about and something called town. You're talking about if it had palm trees around it, we would call it a village. If it had cacti around it, we would call it a barrio. But they are these little old historic you know, two or three families populate a holler kind of thing. And, you know, back when we had post offices all over the place, they had a post office, they had a general store, somewhere to buy some gasoline, shotgun shells, maybe some gingham so Mama could make the children dresses, the girls' dresses and the boys' shirts at the beginning of the school year. And they just get erased. And it's really, really sad to behold. And these things are just the idea that you've got one man with his wife with Alzheimer's and he won't move her out away from the blasting because he's afraid that it will make her Alzheimer's worse. Then he dies and the 65-year-old retired coal miner's son is the one who winds up taking care of Mama.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's remember that that's one of those people that Obama was talking about today that Paul Ryan wants to throw out into the street. You know, the woman whose house is being blasted.
Right. I mean, yeah, there's no... And that's the thing that's really disturbing. It's like there's no conception of the reality. And, you know, our only reality is supposed to be relying on a man who said, the only thing standing between me and a pitchfork, between you and a pitchfork, is me. That's what we got to rely on, Bob.
Yeah, it doesn't just inspire a whole lot.
And it's disturbing because, you know, you get the impression that, you know, Obama, you know, he knows, but he's made a choice to do something else. And I guess that's what's so disappointing about him on some levels, too.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's something that, you know, I guess, you know, he's got to come to terms with and move on. But I'm not going to be fooled by it anymore. You know, I'm kind of over it, so.
Oh, and I just found a sentence out of the Times editorial, and it's right at the very lead. One of those things that just sort of gets the little hairs up on the back of my neck. To reach a lost American place, here just a moment ago, follow a thin country road as it unspools across an Appalachian valley's grimy floor. I've been in a lot of Appalachian valleys.
Oh, God.
They ain't grimy. What's grimy is the coal.
Mm.
Past a coal operation or two, a church or two, a village called Twilight. Beware of the truck traffic. Watch out for that car-chasing dog. And while, again, while I appreciate the fact that the thing is there, can we go without the elitist atmospherics at the front end?
Well, it's sort of, you know, that of course, when you were reading that, what popped in my mind was the Mountain Dew comment that floored me, which I haven't recovered from.
Oh, Diane Sawyer and Mountain Dew mouth?
I'll never get past that. Because I never heard anything like
these little these little hillbilly children's teeth rot in their heads because of what people around here like to call Mountain Dew mouth. Mothers of hillbilly children put Mountain Dew in the children's bottles at an early age and allow them to suck.
That one. So, I can appreciate when you say, the elitist atmospherics. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, my head is still pretty much done in from Joe Bajan's book. And I'm looking at so many things with Joe, kind of with the eye that Joe, in a way, anybody who sits down and reads that book gets taught to see with. And I'm, I heard the speech today with that book in the back of my head. I read this article with that book in the back of my head because it kind of opens your eyes to understanding that it's kind of like white folks and racism. I, as a white person, understand that it's just a current that runs through my people, that some of us overcome it and some of us don't. And that kind of talking about America, talking about an America that they have neither a clue nor a desire to ever actually inhabit, you know, that's what you wind up with. Grimy Appalachian Valley floors.
Also, I guess it's a little bit different, but it's still more destruction, which is what that article is about. But the Japanese situation, if I may just briefly.
Certainly.
That situation is so absolutely horrifying. I'm sorry. I know I've been going on about it since it started, but it's just awful. The sort of dribs and drabs that are coming out are just really becoming awful dribs and drabs. You know what I'm saying?
Let's see. There was the radiation in the milk in Hawaii?
Yeah, and also strontium. Now the different shit is they're talking about it as if it's like iodine-130. No, fools. This stuff don't ever go away. There is no half-life that's pertinent to us.
Right. There's no half-life that's mathematically calculable on a humanly pertinent scale.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, it's also kind of, now they're talking about someone optimistically said, well, maybe at the end of the year, I'm like, the end of the year, you know, the end of the year, one stage of the cleanup will be done, the end of the year. Let's see, that's a lot of months, end of the year. And then they go on about, well, eventually they have to put concrete over each one, but they need to make sure they get it all the way down because it may have melted through the, you know, into the ground. And anyway, all I'm trying to say is that this seems to be BP on steroids for years on out. And not only am I concerned about the West Coast here, but what about Japan? Is it over with? I mean, what's happening?
And nobody's telling. Nobody's telling.
Because I was hearing, somebody was doing an interview, I can't remember, and they were saying, well, they got friends who are, like, evacuating. They out. They from Tokyo. They're like, and cut.
Yeah. Thanks for all the fish.
And so, I don't know. I just, you know, I'm just, because, you know, we only know so much about the whole nuclear business. And what's really scary is that I'm getting the impression that they know about as much as we do, the people who are trying to sort it out.
And well, they may very well know less. And by the by the same token, the same thing that got under my skin when I went to look at the Chris Hedges video. You know, you can expect it in a year's time. You know, with Fukushima. You know, there it was, this happy ad saying everything is right and okay with the Gulf. We're a year in, and man, the fish are back, and the tourists are back, and we're feeding them poison fish, and they're going to go home and get cancer, but they'll never blame it on us.
Well, that's what I was saying about that restaurant commercial. Oh, we got the restaurant. Yeah, come on, come on, come on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was hideous. I don't know, though. You know, this is kind of a problem for the media. I guess if they continue the way they're doing it now, they just won't say nothing. And we over here don't ever pay attention anyway, and I guess it will just continue on, and maybe one day we'll look at the New York Times and it'll say, Japan has been evacuated, and we'll go like, oh, wow, when did that happen?
Yeah, to where?
So, and I don't mean to make light.
Because I don't think we can do with a major portion of the Japanese population what we did with New Orleans and send them to Utah. Because, you know, where's Babs Bush? Is she ready to talk about she's afraid that the Japanese will enjoy living in the Astrodome too much?
Well, oh, God, no. But unfortunately, you know, for the people in Japan, you know, they'll just be stuck where they are. I mean, that's the reality of it. But there'll be, you know, I guess it'll just be sort of a mass die-off, Malthusian type situation. I mean, I don't know.
I don't either.
And it's Malthusian situation for the rest of us as it spreads all over the place. I mean, I really don't know.
Well, that's why, and granted, mostly I was talking about coal when I've said it before, but it's applicable across the board, Sandra. We're all downhill. We're all downstream. Yeah, there's nobody. Who knows? You know, I've had so damn many radioactive isotopes in me lately. Well, I mean, only one, I hope, but a bunch of them in the process. You know, if I'm glowing in the dark, who knows if it's Fukushima or that damn scan I had a couple of weeks ago?
Which is what I guess they're counting on. And I have to add that the horrible corporation here, PG&E, they're demanding that Diablo get an extension for like 60 years.
Yeah.
They're like, because people are saying, oh, hold up. They got a big outcry going on here. They're like, oh, no, bitches. We need some more tests or we need something. The public is crying out. And PG&E is demanding, no, we want the extensions now and we want them until 2045 or something real ridiculous. It's like driving a 60-year-old car from here to L.A. Hello.
It ain't going to make it.
Good night. So anyway, I'll just get back to my controllable vocabulary database that I'm working on. Just disappear here.
That sounds like more fun than most human beings deserve to have.
Oh, God. Okay, have a good evening.
See you, Sandra. Bye now. If you haven't gotten a chance, this is a lengthy story. It's not an editorial. I misspoke in speaking to Sandra. Do go to the New York Times. It is a full-on article under the subheading of This Land. It's called As the Mountaintops Fall, a Coal Town Vanishes. It has delightful remarks like this. It's talking about Lindy Town. And let's see. You know, you've heard from Maria Gano on this program. No shrinking violet, Maria. It describes Maria as a rake thin woman named Maria Gano who climbs into a maroon Ford pickup that is adorned with a bumper sticker reading "Mountains Matter, Organize." And it says she has sorrowful dark eyes, long black hair, and a desire to be on the road only between shift changes at the local mining operations and only with her German Shepherd and her gun. Well, that's because the coal mob is a mob. They're thugs. They really are. And I know there are some of you who will get this, and some of you who will be on the floor as a result of it. Ms. Gano turns onto the two-lane road, Route 26, and heads toward the remains of Lindytown. On her right stands Van High School, her alma mater, where D. Ray White, the gifted and doomed Appalachian dancer, used to kick up his heels at homecomings. Gifted and doomed Appalachian dancer? Wait, are we talking about the same guy here? I think, yeah. Maybe? Because I'm, well, maybe not, maybe not. Gifted and doomed? Well, if he was doomed, it was because, well, you know. Then there's a comment from the economic development guy for Boone County, West Virginia, where Lindy Town is. And it talks about how they have, every June, Boone County plays host to the West Virginia Coal Festival with fireworks, a beauty pageant, a memorial service for dead miners, and displays of the latest mining equipment. Without coal, says Larry V. Lodato, the director of the county's Community and Economic Development Corporation, you might as well turn out the lights and leave. Yeah, because God knows us hillbillies are too damn stupid to figure out any other way to make a living besides destroying ourselves, our families. Right. Yeah. And so they asked Mr. Lodato about Lindy Town. Now, this guy is the county economic development director, right? Which mainly involves kissing the fundament. That's twice in this program now. Kissing the fundament of the coal industry. Mr. Lodato says, I'm not familiar at all with Lindy Town. I know it used to be a community, and it's close to twilight. Probably used to have people in it. No, I added that part. But it goes on at some length, and it is not a flattering portrait of mountaintop removal at all. Yeah, right, right, yeah, there we go. I knew I was about half screwing up. Yeah, D. Ray White was the doomed Appalachian dancer who's was the father of Jesco White, the dancing outlaw. There's another documentary out about the White family. It's, you know, delightful scenes of one of the members of that tribe crushing up an OxyContin and snorting it off of a bathroom toilet seat. Yeah, just stuff that's so good for West Virginia. And Jesco White, you know, I mean, you ever see the Andy Griffith vehicle from early in his career, No Time for Sergeants? The part in the bar where he gets a little lighter fluid to add it to the whiskey because it gives it a little bit of flavor? Yeah, Jesco, if it wasn't moving, he'd either drink it or snort it. Yeah. Following up just a little bit real quick, first of all, Clayton wrote in and said, by the way, I got your back, and Sandra's, I'll believe Obama when I see the veto. And I hate it that it's got to be that way. Following up also with David in Tennessee talking about Paul Ryan and his plan, he says, that crap of Ryan wanting Medicare to go voucher, that is the unvarnished wish for the predatory insurance cabal to have its way with each and every individual that now has access to Medicare. Look. It's just like the big cats on the plains of Africa. The cat wants the single animal, not the herd. The Repiglicans want all Medicare folks to be broken away from the healthy herd that is Medicare only to become a single vulnerable animal armed with only a voucher. It is, says David in Tennessee, purely predatory. Darlene writing in, Bob, I agree with you 100%. I said the same thing. BS. Bullshit on Obama's speech. At times, he sounded like he was laying the groundwork for his upcoming campaign, and he did a major bait and switch on us with the 2008 run. I expect nothing different from him for 2012. Darlene. Again, I wish to goodness there was somebody out there that could make me feel better about this. But he's caved in so many times, he's backtracked so many times, he has given in. I saw a cartoon the other day of Barack Obama playing poker, and the first frame of the cartoon is him looking at Boehner and saying, you know I'm bluffing, right? Uh, And by the way, just to fill in the blanks on the Barry Bonds matter that Sandra mentioned, yeah, he got a guilty on one charge and there was a mistrial on the remaining three. David notes what it means for Clemens. Means he's in deeper shit than he was when he got up this morning. Bonds lied to a grand jury. Clemens demanded a chance to testify before Congress, and then he lied. Lied. He demanded a change to purge him. He demanded a chance to perjure himself. Yeah, that's an oopsie with a side of stripes. William says, I did not vote for Obama. That is not to say I get an award or anything. I just did not trust him or the other offerings on the ballot. Obama reminds me of the TV commercials that tell you to ask your doctor if this drug is right for you, and then the horrific side effects are rattled off, yet people take them. It's the same lie, says William, as clean coal. Obama talks in circles when at the end, what did he really say or not say? It is, I don't even necessarily know if it's what he said or didn't say. It's, why did he say anything? Why give away, again, you know, why look at, oh, I'm bluffing. Because everything that was mentioned in that speech is now on the table. Coming from us. Remember, the Republicans have said that taxes are not on the table and will never be on the table. So we start out, we take the first step forward when the first, and that first, no. Ron in Raleigh says, by the way, while your calculator's handy, Bob, John Kasich of Ohio has just struck a deal with Diebold to keep 1,500 jobs in Ohio. He's spending $100 million. How much is that per job? Well, you know, we can work that out right quickie. Let's see, that's 100,000,000 divided by 15. You know, the biblical fundamentalists might want to shy away from this. That's $66,666, and a repeating decimal 66 cents out to about the 20th place where there's a 7. Could John Kasich be the Antichrist? Nah, I don't think you're going to have much luck getting Rod Parsley to say that. Especially when the right wing's already quite busy out there. Have you seen the latest? The right wing's very busy out there advancing the, has Barack Obama had brain surgery? Is that when they inserted the liberal wealth redistribution chip? Apparently some photographs make it look like there's a scar on Barack Obama's, on the back of his head. It looks like the kind of scar you'd have if you'd had radical Kenyan brain surgery. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, I got a few questions, a few statements, if I may be allowed to make them.
Well, do not hide your light under a bushel.
You know, in the first place, why wasn't this speech made from the Oval Office? Why did he have to go to George Washington University?
Can I posit an answer to that? No. Well, maybe. Was it George Washington or American where Kennedy made his famous conciliatory speech toward Khrushchev?
Oh. You know, I don't remember. It could have been American.
I think that was American, but...
You know, in the first place, why this speech should have been made from the Oval Office. Number two, he should have made this speech over a year ago. And number three, he should never have extended the Bush tax cuts in the first place. This guy has given in more times to these people and appeased these people five times as many times as Chamberlain did back in the 30s. And I'm afraid, you know, I just don't have a lot of credence in what the man has to say. What he made this afternoon was a campaign speech. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, that's exactly the whole thing. I mean, he has kowtowed so much to the American business community and the robber barons and tycoons and things like that, that what he has to say means very little to me.
Because you had, again, I think because like many of us, you just don't feel like you got anything to hang your hat on as far as actually feeling like he's going to follow through.
No, exactly. I don't think so. No, I believe that it's just more rhetoric. I agree with Sandra and the other people who've written into your program tonight. And you've got these people like Ryan, a congressman, and I got an email I'll just share with you.
All right.
Social Security. And it goes like this. Entitlement's my ass. I paid cash for my Social Security insurance. Just because they borrowed the money doesn't make my benefits some kind of charity or handout. Congressional benefits, a.k.a. free health care, outrageous retirement packages, 67 paid holidays, 3 weeks paid vacation, unlimited paid sick days. Now, that's welfare. And they have the nerve to call my retirement entitlements. Think about it. What is wrong with America? Wake up, America. California's $20 billion budget deficit. The California Supreme Court ruling that illegals can get college benefits and attend college. This is something else that's strange here. But anyway, basically, this thing about Congress is very true. I mean, this is the reason I have referred to Washington so many times as the Forbidden City. I mean, these people are just like the people who lived in Beijing at the time of Henry Puyi. They are interested in one thing and one thing only, and that is filling their own rice bowl.
And it's very much like the Forbidden City, too, as well, Jim, because I sense that, the look at the response to the speech today. That wasn't a speech for mom and pops out there worried about whether the Social Security check was going to keep on coming. No, that was a speech to impress the mandarins of the inside the Beltway political, especially the political reporting crowd.
Well, I think that's exactly probably right. You know, I downloaded a book on my Kindle today. You might be interested in it. It's called Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Rule the World by a guy named Cohen. I think you ought to take a look at it and download it. And it discusses Goldman Sachs and Wall Street and the influence that Wall Street has. I mean, this guy, I'm afraid, our president, simply, no matter what he says, it's just too little, too late. He's given in to these people so many times. I mean, for example, like Goldman Sachs, for example, they got a $13.5 billion bailout through the back door of AIG. And they think they can do it, and they'll do it again.
Right, and they still won't do the right thing with it, because remember, that bailout money was not there for them to stuff into the mattress. It was meant to stimulate the economy. It was meant to go out as business loans. It was meant to go out to keep liquidity flowing. Did they do that?
No.
They stuffed it in the mattress.
Well, they
did. Look, free money.
Sure. I mean, they did. They had marvelous bonuses and vacations and things of that nature. And I'm afraid that this man's speech is just a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. And when he starts talking about putting everything on the table and removing any type of power from the third rail, Social Security and Medicare, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out really what is behind all this.
Well, there was that. I mean, I trust that you watched the speech.
I did.
And you caught that line, I'm sure, about how about explaining how the baby boomer generate, you know, and we've got to, you know, we've got to cut the debt, or the debt's going to cripple us, and we're going to have to borrow a billion dollars a day from China, yada yada yada. Well, if you take all of that at face value, by God, those are some pretty grim circumstances, aren't they, Jim?
Yes, they are.
On the other hand, however, if you look up and say, wait a minute, what if we come up with a humane answer to our undocumented immigrant problem, and they get start being paid on the books instead of off the books, and their Social Security contributions go in? What happens if we end the limit, the upward limit on Social Security contributions, and everybody pays in to the fullest extent of their income? Problem solved.
Well, I think it would contribute very greatly to the solvency of those programs. Yes, of course it would.
And, of course, we have to remember that Social Security is solvent until the year 2037 at full benefits if we do absolutely nothing.
That's right. But nobody ever mentions that.
And then it begins to the solvency begins to decrease, and not even at exponential rates. Okay? That's if we do nothing. If on the other hand, we were to inject those off-the-books incomes, and if we were to eliminate the ceiling on FICA withholdings, well, bang! What does that extend it out to? 2050? 2100? 2150? I mean, does it become a Rush album? You know, 2112?
I'm not sure exactly how far that would extend the program solvency, but nonetheless.
Well, it would have to be substantial if we are dealing with total solvency for the next 26 years.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, basically, these people, you've got a very, very small minority of people who are just getting away with paying no taxes whatsoever. I mean, what was the company? Was it General Electric?
Yes.
Didn't pay any taxes this year?
Right.
I wonder who they're accounting
on. How many billions of profits?
I don't know. I sure would like to meet her, their accountant, but I probably would be able to.
Well, actually, it's more like 526. They've got it. That's, I think, or 400 and some odd, or something like that. That's the size of their staff that does nothing but look for loopholes all day, every day of their entire meaningless lives.
Well, their lives are very meaningful for a very, very small minority of people. But I mean, this thing about he had mentioned something about the tax codes and reforming them. How's he going to do that to make the tax burden more equitable?
You know, I don't know the complete answer to that, but aren't some elements of the tax code handled administratively?
Yes, they are, but they have to follow a congressional guidelines.
Yes,
the IRS is not a law unto itself. I mean, IRS regulations are founded in public law.
True.
They're founded in.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know where that demarcation is.
Well, the demarcation, it runs from public law to IRS directive, and from the directive, that's how they print the regulations that you find in your tax booklet. It's just like in the military. All regulations concerning the military are founded in public law. That in turn transitions into DoD directive, and then into particular service regulation. That's how that works. That's exactly how it works.
And so any of that stuff that he's talking about has to get through Congress? You know, for instance, reducing the availability of itemization for the J.P. Gottrocks crowd?
You damn skippy it does.
Then it ain't going to happen.
Do you have any idea of what type of lobby association the accountants have in this country? It's one of the strongest in D.C.
So, in other words, it's not going to happen.
In my opinion, it's not. And if it does, it would surprise the hell out of me.
So that was just that was just sound and fury signifying nothing.
Well, a tale told by an idiot strutting forth his way about the stage, yeah. And like I said before, if this had been done 2 years ago, and if he had had the balls to stand up to these people and say, "No, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to veto it," and let them know they aren't, marshal the support of his own party when they had majorities in both houses of Congress and couldn't even get a bill passed, and left it up to this new Congress that came in November, or came in whenever they did in January, that was voted in November. I mean, I'm sorry. I just think it's too little too late. I mean, this guy had 2 years, and he wasn't the only one that had 2 years to do a lot of the stuff. Now, these chickens have come home to roost.
Well, and by the way, the $38 billion budget deal, the details are sneaking out now, Jim, slowly but surely. And that's turning out to be a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors, too. This is from an Associated Press report. The Congressional Budget Office estimate shows that, compared with current spending rates, the spending bill due for a House vote on Thursday would pare just $352 million from the deficit through September 30th. About $8 billion in cuts to domestic programs, you know, things like feeding children, and foreign aid, more feeding children, although occasionally helping Israel buy more jets to bomb more Gazans with, that kind of stuff, are offset. So about $8 billion in cuts to domestic programs and foreign aid are offset by nearly equal increases in defense spending. The CBO study confirms that the measure trims $38 billion in new spending authority, but many of the cuts come in slow spending accounts like water and sewer grants that don't have an immediate deficit impact.
Well,
in other words, it's a con.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. I'm afraid you're right. I really do. You know, that's the reason I sent you that email, as far as, you know, man, it's not the measure of all things to me.
Well, I just haven't found another appropriate yardstick. I mean, we can use the dinosaurs, and they were more successful on this planet than we were by far in terms of longevity.
No, what I said was perhaps there exists a more intelligent and care species that would be more of a caring custodian for the world in which they live than mankind.
Well, I think there's almost general agreement that the next ones to get a whack at the ball are the cockroaches.
Could be,
or maybe the rats. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think Sandra mentioned the Malthusian doctrine. Well, you know what that is.
Sure.
The means of resourcing people proceeds in an arithmetic progression. Whereas the numbers of people, it's nearly exponential. In other words, the means to feed all the people in the world doesn't catch up with the burgeoning population of this planet. I mean,
it's a simple as far as I'm concerned, it's a simple analysis of something that any good old boy hunter here in Appalachia can tell you about, and it's called carrying capacity. You know, if you've got too many deer, too many turkeys, too many whatevers in the woods, well, they will eat themselves out of house and home, and they will breed like crazy, and pretty soon the starvation will come along, and there will be a big die-off.
Well, I think the same rules apply to man.
They do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Exactly. And I've always felt that way. I mean, I was taught many years ago, the more people you have on this planet rubbing shoulders and trying to fight over space and resources and things like this, you're going to have nothing more but more trouble, more wars, and the destruction of the planet as a whole.
You know, the whole history, and it's fairly well known, the history of human habitation of the island that we know as Easter Island, known to its occupants as Rapa Nui.
Right.
It's a lesson for the planet, because they were utterly isolated, and as such they had only available to them the resources that were present on that island. And in a very short period of time, they screwed themselves.
And look at the Mayan civilization.
Right, Easter Island is particularly telling because, you know, there was room to expand and contract within the Mayan civilizations, but with Rapa Nui, they were where they were, and that's all there was going to be. And the thing that you extrapolate from a place like Rapa Nui is that this whole planet is Rapa Nui.
Well, it was the same thing.
Because there's no getting off the rock right now.
Well, the same thing with the Mayans. I mean, because they wanted to burn all that limestone and stuff like that to make their buildings white and stuff like that, they literally burned themselves out of existence. They burned themselves, out of a means of having the agricultural resources to support the civilization.
And they bred themselves out of it, too. And they also did themselves out of it socially, because their wealthy class was constantly driven to build bigger and better pyramids and carve bigger and better stelae and more temples, because that was the only way that they could manifest their wealth.
Well,
you know, there are all kinds of examples on the planet. There's the potlatch culture of the Great Northwest, where the only way you could, if I understand it correctly, and our resident anthropologist may well correct me, but it got to the point where the ostentatious gathering of wealth became manifested when the headman would just burn it all up, just to show he was rich enough that he could.
Well, that's exactly what's happening in this country today.
You know, when you've got a guy, and he's the only person in the vehicle, and he's got a 72-mile round-trip commute, let's say, and he does it in a $60,000 Cadillac Escalade that gets 5 miles to the gallon, what the hell's the difference between him and a Mayan prince? Or the guy who, you know, there's a famous question out there going back to Rapa Nui, Jim, and it's Jared Diamond, I think, who asks it in the book Collapse. What was going through the mind of the man who cut down the last tree on Easter Island? And I think you can ask that of the guy in the Cadillac Escalade.
Yeah.
Except in American consumer culture, we are by God not allowed to ask that question of that guy. And what's more, it's damn near illegal to think it.
Well, yeah, particularly when you've got some of these people like Congressman Ryan making his propositions and things of that nature. I mean, basically what this man is trying to establish is a form of genocide. That's exactly what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
In favor of the insurance company. And, you know, Obama was talking about how can a 70 or 80-year-old person get insurance if he doesn't have Medicare or Medicaid. That's
and remember, the Ryan thing also wants to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, which by definition means that you're getting rid of the insurance company's ability, you're getting rid of their ability to deny whomever they wish to, you know, deny. So as David in Tennessee noted in his email, they can cull from the herd, and they can take the good risks and dump the bad risks, and having been dumped, the bad risks get to go and die quickly, as the congressman from Florida, Alan Grayson, noted so elegantly, and for which he was so thoroughly attacked.
Well, look at the insurance lobby in the Beltway. I mean, between the accountants, insurance lobby, and the insurance lobby, and the other lobbyists that support the big business at the expense of the rest of the people, who do you think's going to win?
Right, because the other side of that equation is those people that Obama talked about who have no say-so.
No say-so. And he has not contributed one bit to correcting that situation when he could have. And I go back to what I said earlier. He had 2 years to do more than he's done. And why didn't the Congress, when the Democrats control both houses, pass that could have prevented this and said, you know, we are trying to represent the American people and we are trying to do what is right. They didn't. You know, Kennedy wrote that book, While England Slept. Well, we could write another book, While Obama and His Congress, when they had control, while they slept, and they did. And now you've got a bunch of radicals in there. How many of them, what percentage of the House of Representatives belongs to the Teabag Party?
I'm not sure. It's kind of indefinite, but I do know that Grover Norquist has 235 signatures swearing that they will never, ever, oh Jesus, by God, strike me dead, vote to, quote-unquote, raise taxes.
Well, that's because they want to keep their seat. And they realize that raising taxes is not a popular thing.
And they realize that Grover Norquist, with plenty of Citizens United money behind him, has the power. Not the voters, Jim. Not the constituents. Not the electorate. Grover Norquist.
Well, people of his ilk, yeah, he is their great apologist.
You know, where's a good Robespierre when we need one for somebody like Grover Norquist?
Well,
I know, and that's contrary to my own stated positions, but God help me, sometimes I think like that.
And, you know, I'll be glad to tell you how I feel about that. You know how I feel about that.
Yeah, you want to get out the sharpening stone and right.
Well, you know, when woods cut, chips fly. You know, I cannot think of anything, really, any great social change that was not fueled by some type of violence. I mean, look throughout history. Look at France. What happened to the, you know, how were they able to make changes? Look at the Russian Empire.
Yeah, it had those changes thrust upon them and violently.
Well, they're making a difference. The outcome was just the same. And, you know, I don't particularly care for violence. I've seen it used, and I've seen the results of it, but I'm just looking at plain historical facts. And I just don't think that nonviolence and the position of pacifism is going to answer the question, because these people interpret that as a sign of weakness, and they will simply, as they walk by you on the beach, kick the sand in your face. And what you need to do is to get up and kick their ass.
Well, you know what? People like Che Guevara came to the same conclusion.
Well, Che has some interesting ideas. I'm certainly glad that he didn't get his way in the Cuban Missile Crisis, because
yeah, because he was ready to light the fuse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. I have no great love or admiration for Che Guevara. I just don't. I never have, and I don't understand why so many people do. Other than the fact that he died young and he got his ass killed in Bolivia. But nonetheless, I just feel like that while your position of nonviolence is a noble one, I just question its practicality in light of what has happened in history. I mean, these people are not going to willingly, and I'm talking about our betters, as you call them, they're not going to willingly surrender anything. And unless they are threatened by extinction, they're not going to pay attention to anything but that. These people are bullies. These people are predators. And, you know, you talk about the predators on the herd. Well, the only solution I can find with that is to find another predator who has more power and more muscle than the first predator who's trying to winnow out the herd.
It's hard to argue with it because it's a philosophy that's taken from observations of the natural world to a certain extent.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, you know,
by the same token, no, the rich never give up anything willingly, with very few exceptions. But in many cases, they do themselves in. Look at the Byzantine Empire, which later went, you know, which went on to be, to its godson became, the Tsarist Russia. The Byzantine Empire was destroyed not so much by, things happening on its outside. The things that pushed it from the outside could have been handled by a competent government. But you had a wealthy class that was hell and damnation determined to control every last square inch of ground and to drag from it every last bit of profit and wealth, and in so doing weakened it. I mean, you know, granted, it lasted 1,000 years.
Yeah, but how many emperors did they have in like 10 years, you know?
Oh, yeah.
They must have had 120.
And they had those because every time one of them started to get a little froggy and actually want to take care of business, the wealthy elite would poison him in his sleep or blind him and cut out his tongue. Or, I mean, you know, they were pretty damn brutal.
Well, the very term Byzantine is an adjective that refers to that sort of thing. I mean, it's become an adjective in our vocabulary.
And so they, you know, the wealthy will take themselves down given long enough, but the problem is, while they're busy doing that, they take a hell of a lot of others, as sort of attendants to the corpse.
Well, Bob, I think they might need a little help in doing that.
I understand the urge. I truly do.
No, it's not an urge. It's a fact. It's reality. And when people begin to realize that, I mean, for example, let Ryan get his program through. Well, he's got a lot of people in there who are younger, and the burden of their parents and grandparents is going to be placed on them if you destroy a program like Medicare and Medicaid.
Well, what it boils down to is most people in America don't have the courage to go out and do something like that.
Well, I don't know about that, Bob. I disagree with you there. You know, I don't think you're the one who's talking about people running around in zombie land and stuff like that and not being well ordered about, as the Japanese were, to face their problem.
But that's just our inability to cope and general panic. If you mention it in the context that you're discussing, Jim, oh, heavens no, we could never do that. I mean, hell, there are laws against even talking about it.
Yeah, well, there were laws against talking about it in Tsarist Russia and in the France of the Bourbons, too. I really do not see any other way if the situation should become so bad.
I understand a lot of what you're talking about, but let me offer you something that's the other side of the coin. You want to know what's going to have the internet world all in a tizzy any week now? Headline: The Virtual Girlfriend, Fantasy or Nightmare? Cloud Girlfriend is a buzzy new high-tech companion. Meet the next virtual girlfriend. The announcement of Cloud Girlfriend, an app designed to publicly flirt with users on Facebook. Tech bloggers have been in a tizzy for nearly a month. Now that it has an official release date, April 26th, and a cost, free, it's time for us to take a closer look at her. Well, there's another thing to help us amuse ourselves right over the edge and into the abyss.
What's the matter? There aren't enough inflatable women to go around?
Well, there's plenty of real ones, but the thing is, you have to, you know, you got to have a human relationship with them. And if we've got Cloud Girlfriend, Cloud Boyfriend won't be far behind.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And so what does the company say about it? Well, it's a training ground for relationships. Like the saying goes, practice makes perfect. It can help people come together and practice managing a real relationship and then take it into the real world.
Oh, horseshit. Oh, horseshit.
Welcome to our world.
I know.
And once that thing gets a real good handle on us, yeah, we will go. We'll go all zombie land if virtual girlfriend goes away. You know, meanwhile, I mentioned space flight and getting off the rock a little bit ago, Jim.
I know.
And News Ninja Gene sent me a link, and he said, don't plan on leaving anytime soon. You know, Gene gets up every morning and reads the entire internet. And he sends me this article from Salon. Here's the title. Why we should embrace the end of human spaceflight. If God wanted us to live in outer space, we wouldn't have inner ears. You know, a little bit ago we were talking about Malthus, and now let's talk about Ludd.
Oh, yeah.
Luddites.
That's what I meant in my email to you earlier. Man is not necessarily the measure of all things. And I know this may sound crazy, but hear me out in this. Remember that movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still?
Oh, yes. Klaatu Narada, the Bharata Nictu.
Could you imagine? Should there be a more intelligent life form in some part of the world that they would come in here, or the galaxy, and they would come down and say, look, if you don't correct your problem, if you don't stop this bullshit, we're going to turn your world into a burned-out cinder. And that's the only kind of thing that...
And 20% of the American people would say, well, it must be Jesus.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, I think that pretty much they would realize that if a big silver spaceship came down and Michael Rennie walked out in silver underwear, Jesus, I don't think so. But I mean, you know,
fashion trends change. Toga one millennium, silver underwear the next.
Yeah, but I mean, it does look pretty grim, and the speech today was very, very hollow, and it was a political speech. And it was designed to launch Obama's campaign, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, see, there. That's the thing about Barack Obama. So often, oftentimes, he reminds me of a drum.
Well, he's a chameleon.
Well, no, he reminds me of a drum because a drum is capable of making a big noise, but it only makes it if you thump it. A drum cannot make its own noise.
Well, the guy's a chameleon. I mean, he changes colors every 5 minutes. He says he's going to do this. I mean, I remember him saying, I will defend Social Security to my last breath. Remember when he said that?
Yeah.
And now what's he doing? Well, we've got to spread the pain.
Yeah, and see, I feel like we've done enough sacrificing on our end. It's time to let the boys who eat the lobster lunches do some sacrificing. But, you know...
Exactly.
Then again, we just had the Robespierre conversation. So,
but he just doesn't have the, you know. I'm sorry, I will say again and get off here. He's missed his chance. I think it's too little, too late. and I can only imagine.
Well, but don't confuse that with he won't be reelected, because he's going to be reelected, Jim.
Well, it'd be in their interest to reelect
him. It's absolutely in their interest to reelect him. Why do you think they're running all of these clowns? Why do you think that man with the wombat on his head has already said that if he doesn't get the Republican nomination, he's willing to run a third party? Third party Trump plus, you know, batshit crazy Bachman or even Tim Pawlenty equals Barack Obama wins.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Trump, I mean, the trouble is there are enough fools in this country to take that man's with a bird's nest for a hairpiece or whatever he's got on his head. I'm surprised eggs haven't fallen out of it. To take that asshole seriously.
Sure.
And he's already said he'd spend $600 million of his own money to...
Well, that's enough to that's enough to finance a tasty little third-party run, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and you know, the fact that Obama, in order to run for his job, it's going to take $1 billion to drive his campaign? Does that not tell you something is wrong with our system?
Well, take that a step further, Jim. Where's the $1 billion going to go?
Well, it's going to go to all the people who promote his image. And.
But the vast majority of it is going to go to the media conglomerates.
That's right, exactly. I mean, the fact that a guy is going to have to spend $1 billion to get a job that pays $450,000 a year tells me that the system is inherently flawed and broken. It is just, you know, broken. I mean, the wheels have come right off of it. Someone has thrown a huge shoe into the works, like it's been sabotaged by the people who think they're going to gain the most from it. You know, the word sabotage comes from
Sabot,
when they would throw shoes into the machine. And that's exactly what's happened to our system of government. Doesn't look good. I wish I could be more optimistic. Wish I could agree with you on your principles of nonviolence and all that, but I simply can't. And if I told you I did, I'd be lying to you, and I'm not going to lie.
I would not expect you to. You are a man of your word.
Just again, man is not the measure of all things.
Well, Jim, have yourself a good night, as good as you can after a conversation like this, my friend.
Bob, I've been feeling a long time, my friend.
Right, and you're not the only one. The thing is, that's because you refade in the con. You know, Fields' first commandment is you cannot cheat an honest man.
Well, yeah.
And so, you know, you at least understand that you are observing a game that is crooked as hell.
Yeah,
and for that reason, you're not willing to even think about taking cards or laying down a bet.
I mean, you know, why bother? I mean, I've lived too long. I've seen too much.
Yeah, but I mean, you'll go vote. I'll go vote. We know what the 2012 outcome's going to be. More of the same. Republican majority, and maybe in the Senate, and Barack Obama.
Thank you, sir.
Take care, Jim. Wow. Great couple of Congress program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing? He's why they love Chuck Rivera's shirt, not the shirt.
Jim?
Jim was asking about why they love Chase so much. Is because he makes a real cool.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Well, he's great on shirts, underwear, boxer shorts, what have you. And it's funny. I read an interview with his daughter some time back, where she said, "You know, this really does kind of piss me off."
I'm sure it did. I'm pretty sure she's pissed off that the photographer even took that photo of him.
Well, the thing is, the photographer who shot that. And I think the name of the photo is La Guerrero or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Guerrero has refused to license it any further for any more shirts. So now they're all just pirate shirts.
yeah. I guess.
Without the puffy sleeves, mind you.
Violence and revolution. I was going to say to the college, I think it was Jim, I don't know if he's read it, but maybe you've read it, but I think if you want to talk about violence and revolution, book I read years ago, I haven't read it recently, but Wretched of the Earth by Frantz Fanon, is really a good, it's almost like the modern day Bible, or at least the modern day Bible revolution, you know, mainly focused on the Algerian revolution in the 50s against the French. And but it really goes into the whole thing about this whole liberation through violence. And it's actually a movie made. Do you ever see that movie, The Battle for Algiers?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a stunning piece. It's a stunning piece of filmmaking about brutally violent the bit of war making.
Yeah, but it does get into and what Fanon does. He really goes into the whole because he's a psychiatrist, but you know, it's his profession, and he really gets into the mindset of this whole liberation through violence, where how like these people actually, you know, by committing these acts, were actually liberating themselves. And you see that commonly when you see these terrorists and people talk about it. Everybody wonders why they do it, but it's almost like there's a certain level of liberation because they feel like, you know, this oppressor, it's like that thing is being lifted off their back, even through violence and death and all the suffering that they go through. They're willing to risk it all. And he really goes into, I remember I read it years ago, and it was just, it really makes you understand why people would, you know, go to that level to gain what they believe is their freedom. And sometimes I wonder, do Americans really have that level of commitment to freedom?
Well, I don't even know that Americans have that level of freedom itself. Yeah. I mean, when you think about about the number of thou shalt nots that you and I, Gary, not the Wall Street banksters, not the silk suit and lobster lunch types, but when you consider the number of thou shalt nots that surround us in our daily life, it don't feel real free. And to that extent, you know, yeah, that much I can understand from the teabaggers. Well, it won't pay not pay taxes. Sorry, no. You want to, you know, you want to drive on paved roads? You pay taxes. Because you know, privatized turnpikes? No, that's only if you can afford it, sucker. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Until Barack Obama or some Democrat in the future comes out and says this whole tax argument is white people who don't want to see black people or brown people in this country getting any services on their watch. Because that's all it comes down to about. That's all this is about. Until they say that, and that's why the Democrats are stumbling blah, 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 all the time, because they won't come out. They can't come out and say it almost. Because if they came out and said that, you know, the barrel will be turned right back on them. I hate to use those words. But you know, if he come out and said it.
No. It'd be a nationwide hide the white women moment.
Yeah, it's like it's a class warfare, but AKA Negroes against white people. That's all this really is about. I'm sorry, that's what this tax thing is about, and that's why people just go crazy over it. Like they can't figure out why.
Well, yeah, it's like that Freudian slip that Mike Pence from Indiana had that just about gave me an on-air aneurysm the other night, where he said we're trying to get a victory for the Republican people.
For the white people, that's what he meant to say. He didn't have he didn't fool.
Well, Republican people are white people.
Yeah, that's what he meant to say. He should have just came out and said it. If he just said white people, I mean, when he said Republican people, I know exactly what he meant. He said white people, I know what he's talking about. When he said Republican, I think white. I hate to say it all the time because I have some black Republican friends, unfortunately. But
there ain't just a whole bunch of them, are there? Black folks in the Republican Party are statistically insignificant. Can we say that?
Yeah.
I mean, they are a rounding error.
They're hateful. They're usually the ones I know are self-hating black people because they're very hard on black people. Very hard on black people. Almost every, in fact,
Clarence Thomas, anybody?
Oh yeah, he's a classic example. You know, somebody who wants to get back at people who he felt, you know, dissed him as a kid or whatever. So just a weird psychosis these people have. But I think this whole tax thing, if it doesn't get to that level of argument, I don't think you can win it. I personally don't think they can win it. You got to bring it down to the gut level of what the root issue is, racism. Somebody's got to bring that out, period. That's all I got to say on it.
And when does that happen?
When does that happen?
Yeah, like never?
it's not going to happen in a political forum. It's going to probably be 30 years before. It's just going to basically have to, just going to be a generational just passage of thing. America's never going to deal with racism, straight up. I don't think they are. I think you know that, Bob. They're not going to deal with it.
I had a buddy a generation ago, and he and I grew up together in Alabama, and he and I shared similar leanings. And sometimes, you know, a couple of drinks in on a Friday night or whatever, or something, he'd say, you know what? One of these days, this is going to be a beautiful nation, because we're all going to be this off coffee color. Nobody's going to be black. Nobody's going to be white. We're all just going to be sort of interbred, not inbred, but interbred, and race is not going to matter anymore. And maybe that's the only organic way that we get out of it. And you know what? At the risk of sounding like Thomas Friedman and telling one of those Thomas Friedman stories that Sandra was talking about a few minutes ago, Gary, I had one of those moments. I had one of those moments Sunday morning, because we got ready to come home from the Chris Hedges lecture. And it was so foggy and so dark, and I talked to Agnes, and she said, you know what? There's no electricity up here. And so I went and got one of those $50 hotel rooms that makes you itch when you get up the next morning before you get your shower. And so in the process of that, I met some young and hopeless white folks from Mingo County, West Virginia. Ain't got no future. One of them's already got a rap sheet for OxyContin selling. Got him a felony rap. And that was just all I could do was sit there and let Joe Bajant whisper in my ear, don't talk to him, let him talk to you. Listen, Bob, listen. It's about listening. And then we went down to breakfast, Ferg and I. And again, not saying anything, just observing. But what I saw, Gary, was, and I don't want to make anybody mad. I'm not trying to be insulting. It was just the reality that I observed. Here you had a West Virginia family, okay? Because I mean, frankly, there weren't any other cars in the lot with anything but West Virginia tags on them. And it looked like any West Virginia family at a corporate chain restaurant. And so you got the oldest generation, husband and wife, and then you got the next generation, husband and wife, one more generation, husband and wife, so you've got parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents. And then you've got this beautiful, young, do I have to say white? I mean, come on, it's West Virginia. Beautiful, young, early 20s white girl. Well, she doesn't have anybody opposite her on the table. But at the end of the table, in a high chair, is the most beautiful little girl you ever saw in your life.
Mixed race?
Absolutely.
I know where he's going, because that's where I was getting ready to go. I was going to say the same thing in Virginia.
And you know what? There was a passage in Rainbow Pie, and I'm going to keep talking about it until the entire Horn audience has bought it and told me and confirmed it and said, you can shut up now, Bob. Where Joe said,
"I got free lunch, but you know, I'll try to get that one as well."
Yeah, you get the Rainbow Pie is just amazing. But there's a passage in there where Joe talks about the fact that he said, "You know, let's kind of get past this idea that rednecks and white poor folks are inherently racist." He said, "Racism is something that has been taught to my class." And has been taught to us hard. He said, you're not going to convince me that redneck white folks are essentially racist, because just about every one of them I know has a mixed race granddaughter or grandson or child.
Right.
And it's a compelling argument.
That. Yeah, and I've had real world experiences with that. As you know, I think I mentioned before, but I have friends and family in Brazil. And I actually was down there last year, and you know, when you go to Brazil, you know, so some of them who live in the favelas, which is what they call the ghettos. When you go there, you know, one thing you'll see people just as white as you and just as black as me, and the favelas and the ghettos living side by side.
Yeah.
So in Brazil, and it's a shocking when I, you know, my first time I went there years ago, and you see blacks and whites living together, and it's like, it's nothing. It's not even there. But they still have the class problem. Still, there's still racism, don't get me wrong, because, you know, obviously, you know. But the thing that's interesting about it is that when I was, you know, working on the campaign for the Democrats, I went into Pennsylvania, and I knocked on a couple of doors where, and one in particular where this guy came out, he was just straight up, you know, we talked for a while, hated Obama, hated Democrats, liberal, whatever. And, you know, his daughter comes to, it's funny because what you're saying is just so true. His daughter walks to the front to see who he's talking to, and she's carrying this mixed race child. And he's just playing with the child. He's like, oh, that's my baby. It's cute. And I just looked at him. And, I mean, he was a nice guy. He was a Vietnam veteran, you know. He's somewhat crippled. But same thing with you're saying. You know, he doesn't seem to have a problem with his daughter. But, you know, if you met him on the street, if you're talking with him, hanging around some of his friends, you would think that he's a stone-cold redneck. I don't think he's racist. He wasn't. I mean, he sat there and talked to me for a while. But he was very hardcore against the Democrats and the liberals. You know, because I think of like what you're saying, he was kind of into that Bible, you know, that mentality, the guns and Bible mentality. So I understand what you're saying. I guess.
By the way, something you said prompted Ron in Raleigh to write in, and he says you can divide black Republicans into a few categories, and Ron has mentioned in the past that you know he's a black guy too. So we're not, you know, it's not just a bunch of white folks sitting around opining. He says, you can divide black Republicans into a few categories. First, you have rich blacks, a lot of athletes are Republicans. Second, you have old black folks who hold on to the party of Lincoln. And third, you have assholes like Michael Steele, Clarence Thomas, and the rest of that ilk. The last group are the folks that put me off the most.
Yeah. And you have a few intellectuals like Shelby Steele or something, you know, a couple of them pounding around. Not a lot of them, but most of them, you know. Pouncing around, who just put out all this garbage that doesn't make any sense. But you know that, I mean, that's the reality of the situation until we really get serious about the racism card. And I just feel like, you know, we're really kind of going around a little bit, you know, in circles. That's really my opinion on it. So I don't want to hold you up. I know you got other calls. Please take them.
All right, thanks, Gary. Good call. Okay. Good conversation. Right. Take care. Right. Bye now.
Okay.
That's Gary calling from Maryland. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up, brother?
Hey, how you doing?
You know, it's you're gone for a couple of days, and then it just feels like you never left.
Did you get that article I sent you about decapitated?
Yes.
Can you make her go away? Really, this person, so-called, I don't know.
Well, don't hold back.
You know, geez, God, yeah. Oh, I don't want to hurt the little people. I mean, the little people on Wall Street. These are not little people.
Well, see, what I love is there is an argument out there, Cossack, that says, well, you know, we like to whip Wall Street, but we forget how many people get paid to clean Wall Street's toilets. And if you punish Wall Street, you're punishing them.
Not such luck. But a couple of things. You do know about bioconcentration, correct, in the food chain?
Why don't you help me a little bit? I suspect that I do, but I may not know it by that term.
Okay. As organisms lower on the food chain ingest microscopic amounts.
Oh yeah, yeah. That it accretes in larger and larger amounts as you go up the food chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, the millions of gallons of highly radioactive water that got pumped into the Pacific. Oh, it's not going to hurt anybody. It'll be diluted. Uh-huh. Right. You know how much it takes of, let's say, plutonium to kill you?
Well, how much was in the tip of that umbrella in England not too awfully long back?
Yeah. Well, that was ricin.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That ricin, that was a poison. But no, there was an assassination what? In the late 60s?
Well, there was a reputed hit in the 90s on an ex-KGB guy in Britain, but it doesn't take a whole hell of a lot, and when it comes to, like I said, when it comes to plutonium, it's the most poisonous substance in the world.
More poisonous than fugu fish extract?
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
Okay, just checking.
1 microgram of plutonium internally, and you're dead. You are dead. It will kill you.
You know, I don't think they were talking about plutonium when Disney made Our Friend the Atom.
No, they weren't. And, you know, in addition to bioaccumulation, you realize that Fukushima's been upgraded to a 7.
Yes, I saw that.
And they have now today said, oh, gee, we've belched more radiation than Chernobyl. Well, gee, Chernobyl was 1 reactor. You've got 4 of them blowing up on you. They had another explosion at reactor 3 today.
No, I didn't. Oh, Jesus. And, you know, that's where you wind up with Sandra's question. You know, when do we wake up and when do we wake up one morning and, oh, well, you know, they've evacuated Japan.
Yeah.
And I don't say that flippantly, because I got people that I care about on that island.
Yeah.
On those islands, I'm sorry.
Correct. But still, I mean, you know, is all of Japan going to move over to Okinawa? Don't think so. No. Ain't going to work like that.
No, that's what I meant. You can't do with the Japanese nation what was done too with the survivors of Katrina. You can't just disperse them to Alaska, Utah, and Idaho and tell them, well, you know, it's just like being there.
Well, 200 million people is a bit of a problem. And here's another thing that people don't seem to understand. They keep on saying, radiation is no problem. It's not dangerous. Bullshit. I'm sorry. Bullshit. There is no lower limit to radiation. Even normal, natural background radiation is not good for you. There is no lower limit. Secondly, radiation exposure is cumulative. Fine, it didn't kill you this minute right now. But you know what? You've taken a hit. And that's knocked down the amount of radiation it's going to take to kill you. It's like, if you look in Wikipedia under acute radiation sickness, they've got a chart there. And it tells you, you know, the onset of various symptoms and, you know, how quickly all these things start to happen. And judging by all the symptoms and so forth, and the rapidity of onset, figure that I got somewhere around 6 gray or 600 rem. And the survival rate in that is 5%.
Yeah, and by the way, our buddy Joe Ray, who is engaged in the study of this sort of thing, offering up just a bit of a clarification. He says, howdy, y'all. Just to make everything crystal clear, bioconcentration is when the toxic stuff in the critter is at a higher concentration than the outside of the critter. Biomagnification is what we're talking about.
Right.
Where the higher on the food chain, the higher the concentration of poisons. For example, offers Joe, Pacific Northwest whales are the most polluted animal on Earth. DDT, mercury, all the good stuff.
Right. And that's kind of the problem, that we don't understand that, A, it biomagnifies in the food chain. And as we eat the better fish higher up on the food chain, guess what we're getting?
Well, yeah, see, there was Gary mentioned Brazil a moment ago, and by virtue of everything that went down with me on Monday, I got to watch the Bourdain episode in the Amazon, whatever.
Right.
And they went in search of this gargantuan freshwater fish.
Mm-hmm.
And they got him one. And I know that Bourdain knows these kinds of things, Cossack, so, you know, there's no point in putting it in the show, I guess. But it's this great, God almighty, big-ass freshwater fish.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it came straight out of Jurassic Park. I mean, you know, just that old. And it had some name that I can't pronounce. And there was enough fish on there to feed 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And because I am the way I am, I'm thinking, man, wonder how much mercury's in that son bitch.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, by virtue of the fact that, to a certain extent, Brazil is trying to clean up its act, isn't burning that much coal, maybe it's not. You know, one of the things that President Obama referenced in his speech today was that a budget that eliminates all clean energy funding is not an attempt to solve a problem. It's just an attempt to, you know, kill programs. And he was absolutely correct in that regard. But in that process, he mentioned, you know, Brazil is running half of its cars without using fossil fuels.
Yeah, using alcohol.
And then he says, but we can't?
Why not?
Well, we know the answer to why not. The answer to why not is the Committee for Truth in Politics that we dealt with at the front end of the program. The answer to why not is the BP. The answer to why not is ExxonMobil. The answer to why not is Massey Energy and Alpha Natural Resources and the Peabody Coal and Arch Coal.
Oh, speaking of BP.
And Chesapeake Energy, which is a massive gas fracker, which it turns out may actually be more detrimental in the long run than coal itself.
Yeah. Well, you're ruining the underground aquifers to get to it. That's not
well, and all the stuff you put underground to get to frack it out, plus the way apparently that it burns.
Yeah, it's very dirty.
Yeah, and Jim noting by email, radiation therapy? Try being treated by radiation. It does not discriminate between healthy and diseased tissue. Try being placed on a table while the treatment spec is hiding behind a lead shield. Food for thought. Yeah, see, I don't necessarily, I mean, thanks, Jim. But yeah, that's not lost on me because, bless her heart, you know, gone 1997 and haven't quit missing her since. My mom survived breast cancer in 1973. And that was back when, you know, a lot of women didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The survival rates were nothing what they are now.
Right.
Even though they're not that good now. Not where they should be. And the way they did a radical mastectomy of her right breast and then followed up, and I mean, they took all the lymph. You know, she never sweated under her right arm for the rest of her life. Because all the lymph was gone.
Everything.
Took the muscle, took everything. But the guy did a good job because she lived. But the follow-up to the radical mastectomy was a course of just horrifying cobalt treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I mean, burnt her up. Now, interestingly, and this, I think, maybe plays into the conversation about what long-term exposure does. Ultimately, she died from a condition that was something eosinophilia.
Mm-hmm.
And what that meant was that her bone marrow had stopped producing blood cells.
Yeah.
And instead it was produced solely in her spleen, causing her spleen to massively enlarge, And ultimately, the was the tipping point to her demise.
Right.
Well, that disease may very well have been triggered by the cobalt
therapy.
By the cobalt therapy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as I said, you know, the problem of it is that radiation dosage is cumulative. It's like the old saying. You heard the one about the Chinese emperor wanted to pay back this peasant for some wonderful act he had done. And when the emperor said, how would you want to be paid? He says, well, just give me one grain of rice on the first square of the checkerboard and then on chessboard, and then double it, and double it again, and then double it again. And there wasn't enough rice in China to fill out the chessboard.
Right.
And that's the problem with radiation. It is cumulative. You can only take so much. And that's why they have things like lifetime dosages. You know?
Yeah, sorry, you've had too much. Thanks.
Yeah. You know what a yearly dose of radiation considered to be, you know, a hefty dose?
What?
50 rem or 5 gray a year total. These guys are getting, we're talking about in the hundreds of rem a day. These people are committing suicide.
Well, there's another word for it too, for people who are innocent. It's murder.
Yeah. Especially considering that a lot of these people are, yeah, yes, they're volunteers, but a lot of them are also temp workers.
Yeah, I noticed that story. Don't spend that $5,000 all in one place.
You're kind of going to have to because you ain't going to be around it that long to spend it.
You clearly comprehend the irony of my statement.
I mean, Jesus, people. And they might have to frickin' evacuate most of Japan. And they've already found radiation in the milk in Pennsylvania.
I would love to know, because there's been so damned precious little, if any, news about it. I would love to know what kind of precautions are being taken for the emperor and his family.
Be a good idea to find out.
Because you know if there are precautions available, they will be taken for the emperor and his family first, even if it winds up where he has nothing left to be emperor of.
True. Well, as Lottie said, and I highly agree, Lottie's got a Geiger counter. I would recommend... You might want to think about that. I'm not being facetious. I really am not.
I wonder how much they cost.
They're going to be going real cheap real soon because there's going to be one hell of a demand for them. God. I mean, Bob, when I have my close encounter with the reactor, right? Like I said, this is back in the early 60s when, you know, the atom is our friend. And they did everything they could to get me out of there as soon as possible. Yeah. When they noticed that, you know, the film badge was black all the way across from one end to the other. I mean, we're talking opaque, black. Super exposed. And the decimeter, they said, no, it must be broken. It can't be that high.
Yeah, that's just one of those, yeah, I think I'm going to go home now moments.
I mean, when you get that much radiation, I mean, there was a reason why I whiffed my cookies on the bus going back home. We weren't that far away from where I lived. It was only like, you know, 30-minute bus ride.
Mm.
I was already woofing my cookies there. And when you come down with 106 fever, you know, you kind of figure something's going.
Yeah, something sideways.
Terribly wrong.
Oh, Lottie says, by the way, that Russian Geiger counters are cheap. He said, I paid like $25 for mine.
All right.
He said, it's a digital one that originally went for $400, but it's Chernobyl surplus. Oh!
Bob, that might be an idea.
Yeah, but I can't read Cyrillic, so I'm screwed.
I'll come up there and read the instruction manual for you.
Hey, Cossack, you have a good night, brother.
You too, Bob.
Bye now. You know, I've always wanted to learn to understand the Russian alphabet. Maybe now's the time. So we find ourselves pretty much at the end of the program tonight. Just a couple of, you know, a couple to wrap it up so it's not quite so grim and, you know, well. File this one under great moments in for-profit media history. I found out about it over at Alternet. This is just beautiful. Headline, AP pranked into printing fake story about GE's generosity. Remember the other night when I had the hissy about are there no editors left? Well, apparently they are. If there are, they ain't at the AP. Let me just read the story as it is put online by Sarah Seltzer of Alternet. Perhaps this morning you may have seen a headline claiming that GE would generously repay the government all the money which had not been paid in taxes. And you thought more kindly of the conglomerate. But you were wrong. Here's the fun part. Well, it's more complicated. The story is a fake, but the headline's real. The Associated Press, that bastion of real journalism, fell hook, line, and sinker. I added the hook, line, and sinker part. I added the bastion of real journalism part, too. For a sophisticated hoax from the Yes Men. God bless them. Including an elaborate press release purportedly from GE declaring its aim to return its $3.8 billion tax break to the government and to survey American citizens on how that money should be distributed. And the Associated Press printed it. The hoax made everyone look silly, particularly the news organizations that bought it. But the fact that this story is fake only highlights the selfishness of the corporation for not being so generous and the free ride given to GE by the government. The Daily Beast put it best by writing, quote, "The Yes Men, the satirical duo that has pranked major corporations including BP, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and Dow Chemical, can add two new scalps to its count, GE and the AP." It's a beautiful thing. David in Tennessee shares my fondness for the Yes Men. The Yes Men, I want to have their baby. Oh, I want to have twins. Can I just ask a question of you? You know, horn family to horn family. If you received on your desk, let's say you're an editor at the Associated Press, and you receive on your desk, you know, you come in, you've got your half-calf macchiato soy latte with extra foam in hand, and you come in, go to work, and sitting on your desk is a press release, Or maybe Cub reporter Jimmy Olsen runs through your door and says, "Boss, I've got a breaking story. I just got a press release from GE saying that they're giving back their tax break." How goddamn dumb do you have to be to buy that? You wouldn't. I wouldn't. We are, shall we say, well-versed in Onion 101. But we are also, perhaps more importantly, well-versed in, I hope, if the years and years of this program mean anything, I hope that we are well-versed in Field's Three Commandments. One, you can't cheat an honest man. Two, never give a sucker an even break. And three, don't smarten up a chump. The chump in this case would be the Associated Press. Now, this is not to downplay the genius in any way of the Yes Men. Maybe they're so good I would fall for it. Maybe somebody will punk me big time someday. But come on. A global transnational like GE is going to give back a godforsaken dime? Oh, Margaret, we have a live one. But GE, that editor, you know, the one with the half-calf soy latte macchiato with extra foam and two sweet and lows? Forgot the sweet and lows last time. Well, Jimmy Olsen, it looks like you finally got your first big scoop. Go for it, young man. You're on your way to a great career in for-profit journalism. And damn, but doesn't that half-calf soy latte macchiato with extra foam and the two sweet and lows in it just turn to ashes in your mouth by lunch when you find out that you have been suckered? When you find out that, in fact, Fields' first commandment, you can't cheat, an honest man, is the absolute unvarnished and unfly-blown truth, and you are not an honest man. Ponder that. You know, our buddy John, from whom I heard today that the man who completely changed the field of archaeology, Lewis Benford. I heard that Lewis Benford had died today. Heard that from John. And John has a sig line that goes, "Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water." This was apparently lost on an Associated Press editor somewhere. Run with it! Oh, this will make GE look great! Is it a scoop for us? Has anybody else run with it? Is it on Reuters? Has Agence France-Presse got a hold of it yet? UPI? Is Fox running? Oh my God, we gotta get out there quick, Jimmy Olsen! And bring me back another half-calf soy latte macchiato with extra foam and two sweet and lows on the way back. I'm going to live large today. And by the way, after all those years of periodically noting that Ms. Huffington, who got herself stinking richer, not stinking rich, he already was, stinking richer off the free labor, you know, the free labor that Sandra was talking about a few minutes ago, an hour ago, whatever. Who's gotten herself stinking richer off of free labor of others writing for her. And then sold out and made a bundle with AOL, has been sued by people who figure now that she's gotten stinking richer, maybe she can finally afford to throw a few pennies to the proles who were churning out all that prolix prose that proles make and share the wealth. Hooray for the plaintiffs. Hooray for working people. Because writers are workers too. And a gentle reminder that the program tomorrow night will be a special one. I, India Geronimo, the Constitution under attack, understanding the continued relevance of the 14th Amendment under domestic and international law, coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia State University. I think you want to pay attention for this one. This might just be relevant. And by the way, David in Tennessee, noting AP with AP taking the bait. Sadly, that means that in a classic cost-cutting move, a 19-year-old that was blogging last week was on the desk when the Yes Men launched their scud. So the kid, Jimmy Olsen, knew for damn sure his path to the corner office was covered with very fresh rose petals. Probably true. Probably true. Thanks, David. Humble man that he is, stop taking credit for being my head writer, but in many ways he still is. So that's the show for this evening. Do tune in for India Geronimo tomorrow evening, the regular time. We'll get started right at 6 p.m. We will be live on our Ustream channel and on the Horn stream. And then we'll be back to whatever passes for normal besides being sitting on the dryer come Friday. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to David in Tennessee. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch for all that they do, because all that they do is make sure that all this gets out to you. And many thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. It's a hell of a fight they're in. A hell of a struggle. And they never get winded. And they never say, I can't. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. The Scott Walker.